I'm Korra.
I'm the Avatar. You gotta deal with it.
So you're like the Avatar or something. Big deal.
Who doesn't want a bison as their best friend?
You're the master of all the elements. You should know how to drive.
And then she does.
Does this mean I'm the master now?
Food for thought.
I've never had a girlfriend to hang out with and talk to before. I'll destroy you.
I filmed the whole thing if you want to watch it.
The Avatar thanks you for your loyal service.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar, The Last Airbender, and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongBuFang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Delaney.
Hello.
Sam.
Hey.
Britt.
Hello.
And Allie.
Good night.
You again. You again. You again? Okay.
You again.
As you can see, today we'll be discussing... Rude. I thought that would be funnier, but okay.
If anyone is the evil one, it's you. So first of all...
Specifically put you last in the introduction so I can make that joke, but no.
Wow.
Okay. Today we'll be discussing Korra Alone, the latest episode of Book 4 of The Legend of Korra. An incredibly notable episode, which we'll have much to say and much to gush about. Before we do that, we'll briefly go over the Korra's Comet New York Comic Con panel, which happened yesterday. We were recording this on October 10th. We have feedback from you, feedback from Mel and Jeff weren't here, and we have a lot to discuss about this incredibly notable and, without trying to bias too much, the reactions exceptional episode of The Legend of Korra. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, more info at the end. We're just going to jump right into it, but first we have to talk about the Comic-Con panel briefly. This was Korra's last major panel at Comic-Con yesterday. It was streamed live, which was incredibly weird, because that has never happened before. And
I wish I would have seen it. I was in class.
Yeah, I mean,
I was asleep.
It was streamed live on Twitch. You could have just, if Twitch did not mute half an hour of it, you could have just watched the replay as if it happened. But
they muted half an hour of it.
So without getting into it too much, Twitch has software which automatically mutes archives if they find copyrighted material. They played the Korra soundtrack before the panel started, which was actually what got it muted. So they shouldn't have done that. But anyway, they showed Korra Alone there, and we watched it along with everyone else at the panel, and it was great quality, actually. It was great.
The audio off, and you could actually hear the episode.
I don't think they lowered the floor audio, because when spoiler, Toph is at the end, that you could hear people screaming.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it was low.
I was too busy screaming. I couldn't hear their screams.
Briefly talking about the panel, I mean, there's a pre-recorded video by Janet, David, and PJ who were there, but it was funny. They had a bad mantle picture of Mike and Brian. Mike and Brian proceeded to complain about that for the entire panel.
We're gonna put it in the podcast office.
Yeah, the podcast office, the thing that exists. Yeah,
we're gonna hang it on the wall.
And they were just very sentimental, I guess. And Brian presented concept art for all of Book 4, which I have in every single one, and there were over 50 of them posted because it was streamed live. I could just screenshot it. Is on the DF Tumblr. And there's some interesting stuff. One of the concept arts refers to something as the Earth Empire, Kuvira's army.
Oh.
So something to look for. Jeff spotted. And there's another one. And when... Korra's, which we see in the trailer when Korra's in Republic City, her Water Tribe outfit combined with her short hair, that is marked as 407 on the concept art, which means it's possible we don't see Korra looking like that until episode 7, and also that concept art says this is her final look for the rest of the season, so she'll be staying in Water Tribe with short hair once we hit 407. There's other notable stuff. Brian explains the ranking system for Kuvira's army, which was basically exactly what we said in the trailer, this podcast. So good job, us.
We're smart.
We're on top of things there, yeah. And notable is that the mecha tanks correspond to the rankings of the person,
they're
color coded by ranking, which is really cool.
That's
yeah.
So stupid.
It's kind of cool. I feel like it's unrealistic, but it's.
I feel like that's something Korra would do.
It's not as unrealistic as the movie that shall not be named with its blue everything. That is true.
And the other notable thing is that Asami, Brian says it doesn't, it's, they never mention in the show, but the idea is that Asami invented the new airbender.
I wish they did mention that because it's so important. It is so important.
I don't think it's that important, but it's
important.
Okay.
Maybe they could bring it up in the show. It's possible.
Brian said they don't bring it up, but yeah, they couldn't.
Said,
He said, "Well, we will
they
never."
They say a lot of things.
Maybe Brian's forgetting. I don't know. Anyway,
he did spell Kavir's name wrong, so maybe he forgot.
What? Any other thing? Any other notable things you want to bring up from the panel?
Janet is the most perfect human being.
Okay, other than that,
she said a bad word.
Yeah, great.
That was so did. Brian.
So proud of her.
So proud of you, Janet. Yeah. Okay, anyway. The other very minor compared to this news is the villain for the video game that's coming out at the end of the month is Hundun, a guy who only exists in the spirit world who fought an avatar of the past. And Korra opening the portals has now released him into the physical world, which I think is a really interesting concept. Yes. But anyway, that's video game talk, completely unimportant compared to the Korra alone, which we'll now discuss.
The video game is so much more important.
Hilarious.
Let's talk about the video game.
Written by Mike DiMartino, directed by Ian Graham, storyboarded by Steve Ahn, Chris Palmer, our friend Ruler Zika, Jen Bennett, and Brendan Colger. I don't know I was not familiar with the last two, so it's possible they're new. It's an episode. Let's go around the horn and get your initial thoughts. I don't feel shoehorned into just giving me thoughts on the episode's quality. You can also give me emotional reactions and plot reactions to what happened as well. But do also say whether you think it was good or not. Let's start with Allie.
Of course you did. Okay. Well, obviously, you know I loved it. And we're going to talk about... I'll talk about quality later. Obviously, this is my favorite episode by far for many reasons.
Of Korra.
We'll explain it. Of Korra and Avatar.
Probably. And Avatar,
I have to go rewatch everything. But this just elicited, I can't talk. Is that the right word?
Yeah, that's fine.
Elicited. It's 2:30 in the morning. Elicited so many emotions, and like, it was so real, and like, the acting, and the music, and just the pacing, and everything was so perfect. So yes, it was very, very good.
Wow, that was such a subdued reaction. I should note that we are recording this 1:30 p.m. Eastern time. Allie is in Japan, so it is
okay. But
there.
Okay, yeah. I recorded my reaction and I fell out of my chair multiple times. And I oh,
you
were, it was
yeah,
over,
you should
so.
Post your reaction.
You guys
that'll
see
be great.
That later.
Okay,
I'll post it on my Tumblr.
Delaney, what did you think of the episode?
Everything Allie said, and I loved it. Incredible episode. I was so blown away by the structure of the episode, which, like, I guess I'll get into later. Like, that was the big thing that struck out to me, not only the content-wise. Also, Toph is my favorite character ever, and I screeched, and noises, and Toph. And then all the mentions of the old... It was great! I loved it. Feels.
What?
Those are good. My thoughts.
Yes, okay. It took me a second to process that. Okay. Sam, what did you think?
Shallow, stop. Yeah. It's my favorite episode.
Wow. Of Korra? Of Korra and Avatar?
Of Korra, like Allie, I have to rewatch Avatar. Yeah. But as of right now, it's my favorite episode. High five.
Very nice.
Anyway. The only thing I didn't like about it was the title.
not a good title. Never.
I'm not a fan of the title either.
We'll get into the title in Mel when Mel's thoughts come up. Yeah.
Well, Mel has a lot of thoughts.
She does.
I don't know. It was really real. Like, I really connected to it on an emotional and personal level, and I think that's why I liked it so much. Because they drew from, like, that thing. I don't know. It's hard to explain. We'll get to it.
Yeah. There's one part I also pretty really
there's
connected to.
Parts.
We'll talk about it when we get there. But Britt, what did you think?
I adored this episode, and I watched it in a library. Let me tell you how hard it is.
Oh my god, I didn't know you watched it in the library.
Why did you do that to yourself?
I had to watch it during class. I had an hour break because I didn't get up early enough this morning to watch it. And then, like,
I thought you went to, like, a study room or something.
No, I was sitting in the library just trying to, like, not freak out.
Oh my god, how do you do that?
That's amazing, how did you do that?
Anyway, thoughts. Great.
It was beautiful.
Yes.
And I cried and I laughed. And it was beautiful. And there was a puppy.
Yes, the puppy.
I love how everyone loves the puppy.
Everybody loves
the puppy.
Who doesn't?
Who wouldn't love the puppy, though?
People who like cats.
I like cats, and I love.
I like
puppy.
Cats, look, but the puppy was amazing.
Look, cats
it's
are,
a puppy.
I'm more of a cat person, but that dog was great. So okay.
So it's a but still, it's a puppy. Puppy.
Puppy.
Puppy. Yes. Okay. My thoughts.
I'm just gonna end on puppy.
No, wow. I mean, we're setting
we're
it up
name
already.
The puppy.
Well, we'll get into what's with the puppy. Jeff has a crack theory about what's with the puppy. By the way, Jeff and Mel are not on the podcast, but have thoughts that would be brought up. Not on this current podcast. So this episode is certainly going to be is certainly incredible, right? It's certainly one of the best episodes of Korra, easily. So, but getting beyond that, it's pretty difficult to analyze, I think, how well they handle Korra's mental state, Korra's emotional state, and how it journeys throughout this entire episode, how this episode works as a cohesive unit. And I find it, I've seen the episode 4 times now, and I find it very difficult to think of, to figure out what I think of it. But I do think I've arrived at a good place. But I do think my reaction will be very fluid. I think that place is that this is the best episode of Korra, and that it is very close to perfect television. The reason I say that is because the first act, well, the weakest of the three acts is very good. The second act is also very good, maybe incredible. And the third act is just outstanding and probably the best act of Korra ever, beating out the Stakeout's third act, which was incredible as well.
Just a whole other level.
I actually do not think this is a whole other level. I think it's comparable to the Stakeout in quality.
Toph is here.
So I think Toph is actually Toph and the Swamp are one of my initial problems with it, because I don't like when they bring in things that don't work with the rest of it. But the question is, does it work with the rest of it? So that's what we'll talk about.
We don't know until
It's actually probably unclear at this point to see what's going to happen with Korra and Toph until next episode. But
on a life-changing field trip with Toph.
She's already there. She's already on the field trip.
Star Wars Episode 4.
So, okay, in general...
Let me get Toph a piggyback ride.
Yes, please.
Toph was pretty short, yeah. In general...
Piggyback rides, Dylan?
I mean, okay, let's not get
out. You've been friends for how long and you don't even know? Okay.
That what? Did it piggyback rides? Okay. So,
oh my God.
In general, incredible episode. Other things I loved about it were just there's about maybe 10 backgrounds in this, which were incredibly gorgeous.
Oh my God. Yes.
I think this is probably the best background
episode. Wait, Dylan, I have a question.
Yeah.
Why do you think the first act was the weakest? That was what hit me so hard.
Well, we'll discuss. I think the first act is tough because. It was real, I agree, but
Hashtag too real.
It's tough. It's tough. Like it's really hard to analyze how well they do this. I also thought this episode was too overt the first time I watched it, but I found the subtlety in the third act upon rewatches, and we'll discuss that as well. I do think the first act is different than the rest. Okay, but anyway, I really think the biggest headline from this episode, production-wise, and maybe in general, is the cementing of Mike DiMartino as an elite episode writer.
Yes, he finally, I feel like he really hit his stride. Like, everything was perfect.
So
good job, Mike.
Yes. So the last...
He completely hit this one out of the park. Like, I almost, like,
four episodes of that Mike has written are The Metal Clan, The Stakeout, Enter the Void, and Korra Alone. Of those, I think Enter the Void is not an incredible script, but 3 out of the last 4 are the 3 out of the top 4 episodes of Korra, and 3 out of the top 4 scripts. Probably the top 3 scripts. Mike has written all 3. This is incredibly impressive, and so I think it's very notable because we've always... Okay, so like Mike and Brian, we've always known how brilliant Brian is. Brian is the sole artistic... drive behind both Avatar and Korra, and he always has been, and he's always been brilliant. Brian's perhaps the best entertainment or television artist, in terms of not writing, because that could be also art, but in terms of physical art. Brian is probably the best in the world. It's possible. He's been art director on 3 of the best animated shows of all time: Invader Zim, Avatar, and Korra. And
Invader Zim's
very good.
Invader Zim is awesome.
We know how incredible he is. Mike, I think it was less clear because Mike was not in charge of the writer's room in Avatar.
Mike is dumb.
I'm saying Mike is obviously
so bad for Mike.
Mike's obviously great, but Mike is also not trained as a writer. And he was not in charge of the writing in Avatar. He correctly let Aaron Yahas take over that, and to great effect. And also, when him and Brian wrote Book 1 of Korra, there were some problems that continued into Book 2. But now, Mike has seemingly hit some sort of stride. He's found something, and he's just pumped out three incredible scripts out of the last four he's attempted to write, and it's just great. And I think he could totally just be a writer now outside of animation, just in whatever capacity he wanted. Which I didn't really think two seasons ago. So I think that's pretty incredible.
Well, two seasons ago, we were in a very dark place.
Two seasons ago, I considered stopping watching.
Let's not let that. I don't agree at all. I also don't think it was bad. I also do think it was good at parts. Anyway, let's continue.
Hey, I said at parts, and I admit this, and I was in a dark place.
That's a good transition, because Cora's in a dark place here. Let's start with Act 1. So first we have the two clips that we got previously to this episode. The first one is Cora in the present. She's in the bathroom. She dodges the car. She leaves. She sees.
She finally found a bathroom.
Yeah.
Finally.
That's not what we should be taking away from this. And she sees. Okay, so in the concept art that Brian presented yesterday at the panel, this is the Cora. What Cora sees is called Dark Avatar Cora. We have bad experiences with dark avatars here.
So bad, it's ruined everything.
Unalaq.
So I don't know what to call Cora's vision, Rava. But probably
anti-Cora.
No.
Tyler Durden.
Anti-Cora.
Tyler Durden. Yeah, something like spoilers.
What is it called?
No, I did not say it. No.
I'm gonna call the new Cora Tyler Durden.
I don't think of it.
No,
what
spoilers.
Is your...
Dark Avatar. Okay, we're gonna
Neo
call
Cora.
Dark Avatar Cora. Anyway, what Cora's vision? So she sees this.
No, if she was Dark Avatar Cora, she would just be going Rava.
It's her doppelganger.
The doppelganger. This actually, the canon name is Dark Avatar Cora. That's what she was called in the concept art. This is striking, and she says, "You again." And it's the first time we've really. This is the first time we see Cora like hallucinating, seemingly, right? So
yes,
it's pretty striking. Dark Avatar Cora throws the chain at her, and people see.
Scared, girl.
Then she Cora this firebends. People girl. See her, and she's like, "No, I'm okay."
This scene.
Okay, before. Like, we had that clip. I thought people were going to be like, hey, isn't she the Avatar? What's the matter with her? She's going crazy. And they were going to chase her. Like, what's wrong with you? But they were, like, so nice. And they were like, do you need to go to a doctor? I was like, oh.
Yeah, it was weird that they saw a firebender and didn't really do much. But I don't know. Who knows where she is, so.
Well, she's next. They're not airbenders. I don't think they would react negatively to a firebender.
She's next to the swamp, I guess. That's where she is. So people, okay. So then we get the first clip we saw of, for this entire season. It was pretty clever, actually, that Nick released, this is the first clip we got because it didn't reveal the time skip. The flashback to Cora leaving. It's that we've discussed the clip before. Bolin and Pabu already miss her. She goes away. She has nightmares. She's at the palace in the Southern Water Tribe. She wakes up and then she's outside talking to Senna, which is new.
I'm still not over that clip though. Like a month later, I'm still not over it.
Well. How about the rest of this episode? That's worse, okay?
Well, I'll never be over that, ever.
So, Senna's talking.
Never going to be
over any of it. I'll be on my deathbed and still not over this
so episode. This is, no, so, this is now 3 weeks later from the end of book three, since Cora's been back. Cora's talking to Senna outside. She says she's not been sleeping and barely eating.
Cora looks so old, guys. She looks like she's aged a lot.
And but she looks just like her mom, too.
So, it's only been 3 weeks, so she actually hasn't aged that much, but yeah.
She's aged 3 weeks.
Yeah. So she goes.
That's not what I meant to Dylan.
Talking about Senna.
She's talking about, Senna looks really old.
Why does
I was talking about how Cora looks just like her mom.
Yes.
Okay. Senna is a character. She has a line here, so that's good. Maybe we'll get more from her.
It was a very, like,
a very,
anyway. Like, realistic.
Yeah, I agree. And so
feelings.
Cora agrees to go see Katara. So now
I want to know what she's been doing that whole time.
Yeah, it's interesting that she refused to see Katara.
Yeah. So that was implied in that. Yeah.
Well, that's what's fine. Implied. It's all good.
It's cool. I'm good.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Well, it's implied that she didn't want to do that, but then she gives in pretty easily. So now we have a healing scene with Katara.
Well, 3 weeks later.
3 weeks later, yeah, but three still. Weeks later. Compared to some of these other time skips, that's not a lot. So we have a healing, healing scene with Katara. So here's what I want to talk about. Katara says, I understand having a traumatic experience to Korra. Mm. So I wanted to discuss what that was.
I wonder which one.
Which one, exactly?
Which one? Was it Aang dying? Was it her mom dying? What was it?
Was it bloodbending?
Aang died twice, though.
That is true.
That is true.
So I think this is what? So on the surface, this would be her mom dying.
Or Sokka dying.
Or Sokka dying. Or
I thought it was about Aang dying.
That's so, what I thought it was about. All of the above, man.
You mean her entire childhood was a traumatic experience? Yeah, for real.
Anyway. Wow, I'm glad we arrived at answers there. But yeah, it could have been a lot of things. Kara says the poison did internal damage and that she can help her guide the healing process, and she tells her to just move your toe thing, which she does.
Yes, that's great.
So then Korra tries to move her upper body on these poles.
That is an actual physical therapy move.
Yeah.
Okay, this is where I lost it.
Yeah, and then she falls.
Too real. Dylan, you can't laugh at this.
I will laugh at I'll laugh at your reactions, Allie, to a lot of this. Anyway,
you
now we're
cannot laugh at this. It is too real to laugh at.
I mean, that's what happened. It was real.
Oh my god, I'm gonna
too
move
real.
You. Now we're Korra's reading letters in bed from Asami, Mako, and Bolin.
She gave up really quickly.
She says, "We're no more. I'm done for today." Yeah. So now we're reading letters in bed. Asami's
from her girlfriend.
Asami's letter was pretty standard.
First thing she says, "I miss you."
Yeah.
I was like, oh my god.
Republic City isn't the same without you.
Yeah.
Mako has the creativity of a rock.
Then
he talks about the weather.
Then Mako is being offered.
He literally wrote a letter about the weather.
And then he says, enough joking.
He says, like, the weather, there's a chance of snow. But enough joking around. So that was just, I don't think she ever
date him.
So he doesn't,
have to offer.
He doesn't grasp the concept of a joke. But he was just being really awkward. I thought it was funny, actually.
I'm because
impressed
so
that he manages to be that awkward in a letter.
Yeah.
Well, it was funny how awkward he is.
Well, it helps that they had the voice actors reading them, right?
Yeah.
So I actually gonna praise David Faustino here for this read of the letter, which I don't do that much. Like I think he's maybe one of the weaker voice actors in general, but he was just very good here with this.
We talk about PJ Byrne though.
PJ Byrne, not one of the weaker voice actors. Was said in this formal language, including several Fortnites, among other phrases.
It was like he was in some strange medieval novel writing. It was incredible.
Obviously, Bolin taking the pen pals.
He thinks he's Mr. Darcy or something. It's great.
I think
me and Bolin are the same person.
Would you have said several Fortnites in
your
letter?
What his love letters to Opal sound like.
Oh my god. He definitely writes her sonnets.
For sure.
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. And then Bolin also included drawings. Presumably these were Bolin's drawings.
That's what I thought. I mean, it was Kuvira, Varric, and Julie. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and Kuvira had the mole. Kuvira, despite being a stick figure, had her mole on her, which I thought was good.
That was so great.
That's her trademark. Okay. Now we have a greater time skip. It's been 6 months now.
Kill me, please.
She's back with Katara.
Hey, guys, remember she said 2 weeks? A couple weeks.
She did say though she'll only be there a couple weeks. Yeah. So it's been 6 months now. She said she's barely taken a couple steps. Katara talks about how you're not the only Avatar to have gone through suffering. Imagine the pain
you
felt.
Hold on. You missed her blowing up at Katara.
I mean, whatever.
Does that happen?
No, that was
really.
That was now, and Katara's like, okay, that's fine.
It was just really great acting, and it was really real. Mm-hmm. It was too real, man. I'm downplaying this way too much.
What do you think of Katara's lines, reactions, drawings?
Flow
she's
like
very.
Water.
Oh yeah, I'm
she's
not,
very. She's very calm. Like I think she's like old, so like this does not surprise her. Like she's been here, done that.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. I don't know if Katara has incredibly strong characterization here, but that's also not the point. So
yeah.
You know what I want Katara to do? I want there to be like a big finale, and I want Katara to kick somebody's. But
yes, please.
I was gonna say the other word.
I doubt she's gonna. I doubt she'll be fighting. She's
like 80. Well, yes, there are older. There are other old people who fight. Remember in the. Remember in Avatar the finale
when the Order of the White Lotus.
Yeah,
that's
all old people know each other.
Katara's a member of the White Lotus now.
Yes,
I mean kind of, right?
I mean she kind of is.
Yeah.
Like but yeah. not really.
Not really. She's just sitting in her hut in the bottom of the world, yeah.
She just sits in her hut.
At the bottom of the world.
Wow, I did downplay her character even more when I get hate mail.
Well, that is kind of her character right now, right? Like,
I get so much hate.
She's too old.
I don't think Katara's characterization throughout the series has been very strong. That's
I mean, Zuko's older than her.
Yeah.
Zuko is like 2 years older than her. That doesn't really matter when you're 80.
So Katara talks about the pain Aang felt, and then they kick in the Aang song. Jeremy,
that was not the Aang song.
It's the technically theme that is.
No, when
right?
she's walking, no, that's the like a peaceful place.
Is that on the book one soundtrack?
Yeah, they just changed the key. Trust me, I'm a music person.
Well, we've been over you and keys before. Let me look for a peaceful place while we talk about this. Anyway, she's and what
I don't know if Katara's lines were like. I mean, her.
Yeah.
Let's like, not focus not like... on Katara. It's fine. And then what am I going to find if I get through this? So
she's not going to focus on Katara because she was really important.
No, I don't think she was really important. She's just kind of there. So Katara.
But if she had not been there, the entire like plot of the show, the episode would have not have happened.
Well, no one's going to be strong then if she's not there. So she says, Aang comes out like came out of the tragedy like.
I found meaning.
Found meaning, yeah. What am I going to find if I get through this? I don't know, but it'll be interesting to find out. But won't it be interesting to find out? First of all, that's Yves Saint Marie's best line read. Second of all, that's an interesting way to put this, right? Like, it's not expected that she returned to her previous place. Katara is kind of saying, well, it's going to be interesting to see where you go. Maybe it's not the same as before, kind of implied in there.
Even not just to Korra, like, it's a good lesson in real life. For people who are struggling. Like, I feel like you're downplaying this way too much. This is, like, information, or not information, but just, like, stuff you can take with you in real life.
Yeah, you're right. It's a peaceful place.
Because, in general, Katara's not being important, but, like, Katara's being, like, she needs to be the calm one, and she's reacting how a normal person, like, it's she's okay.
A calm, person, a healer would do
and
this, you
someone
know?
Who's gone through this before, like...
Like, a therapist would do this, too.
So...
It's just so real and so
I just think that specific line wouldn't it be interesting to find out where you're gonna find. Like I think that's kind of that's interesting because it's not implied that it's the same anyway. So
she
goes.
There's gonna be some plot twist up in here about fifth episode, and we're all gonna be like, "What the heck is going on?"
Just a plot twist in general. So then she makes
just
it across
like a
the
giant
bowls,
like
and...
plot turn, and like everything's gonna be different, and we'll be like, "Whoa, baby!" Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about where the show's going after this. She makes it across. She hugs Naga.
Naga baby.
I guess this scene is representative of her physical recovery.
It was so real.
I cried.
I cried too the second time around.
I cried pretty much all throughout this episode.
I wanted to, but I was sitting in a library.
If I were you, I would have cried.
And now we're back in the present, and she finds this dog, Poppy. And she says, "Where'd you come from, little cutie? Mm-hmm. Little cutie."
So cute.
I feel like that's the line she used on Asami.
Little cutie.
Yes, definitely.
Oh, that's so cute.
Oh
my god.
Oh, I did use that one sometimes.
Where'd you come from, little cutie? Okay. So she then
That was a laugh, Sam.
She follows the dog and then the dog sees the dark avatar Korra. So then act two, we're back here. She says, "Maybe I'm not going crazy."
How come the dog Because we know about the dog later, but how come it can see?
All right, let's discuss this now. I haven't asked about this, so we'll jump into this, and Jeff also has something to say. So Anand asked me, since the small spirit dog slash rabbit, no, it's not a rabbit. Oh, I guess it was a rabbit. It's a spirit rabbit thing. Slash thing. Rabbit? Could see Nightmare Korra. I like Nightmare Korra. That's
Nightmare
interesting.
Nightmare Korra, that's better.
No,
like
no,
that.
Dark Avatar Korra. Does this mean...
No, Dark Avatar Korra is Vatu.
So why don't we just call her Unalaq, right? Does that this mean it's
Unalaq
not?
Too.
Does this mean it's not all in Korra's head, or does it imply that spirits can actually see inside Korra's mind? Perhaps because Korra's visions are more spiritual in nature, and as the Avatar, she is partially a spirit herself, so other spirits can see her visions when normal people cannot. Jeff says in his thoughts, since the spirit could see the vision, it must not all be in Korra's head, or it could be in her head, since we know that humans' emotions affect the spirit world.
I like Jeff's theory better.
Right, so...
I like Jeff's theory.
I think
Ghost Korra, who's, like, haunting her.
I think it's pretty clear that this isn't... I think it's pretty clear that this isn't Korra's head.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I don't want it to be like a spirit thing.
Yeah, me neither.
Like an alternate like spirit core. Well, I just want it to be
I think it can be spiritual and in her head at the same time, right?
But then like but if it's totally spiritual, cuz if it's totally spiritual it completely lessens the idea that she's struggling with.
Yeah.
Like it would completely defeat the purpose of like this recovery.
Let me reiterate my point in a stronger fashion. I think the episode presents it extremely clearly that the Dark Avatar is not a physical manifestation. Just because the dog can see her, that does not... I think the episode later shows it very clearly when no one sees this and it's just walking around and her struggling in the swamp with her. I think it's just very clearly in her head that the episode's trying to portray it.
I think this is definitely a somatoform thing. Like, it's physically affecting her because she believes it so strongly, because she's a spiritual person. Yeah. Like, it's affecting her physically. You know, like, she has, like, the third dimension.
There could be a chance that like it's mostly in her head, but like it could actually produce something that is more physical on her than like, but it doesn't really affect like around her. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like it really could be hurting her, but like it's not impacting anything around her.
Okay, so I think maybe that's possible, but I don't think that's what's going on.
Like, I don't necessarily think it's likely. Well, no, that's what I'm saying. It's
like it's psychologically caused, but it like she can affect the environment.
Like even crap. What did Katara say? It was like a mind is like can be your greatest ally or your greatest enemy or something.
Right. So when there's two times when Dark Avatar Korra is fighting Korra, Korra's not actually being hurt. Like Korra's not like having physically. Things thrown at her in either one. She might be like. She might just have physical pain because
she's
of this, but it's not.
Around.
Yeah, well, she's not even really. It's not clear whether what happens in the swamp is actually
not a forum.
I would say more likely, and we'll get to this. But when she's fighting the spirit in the swamp, she probably just in her head and she passes out.
Because I mean, Toph does say, "I found you passed out in the."
Well,
mud.
She does pass out in what we see on the screen as well, though. So it's
then also Toph would have if like, and also it proves that there couldn't have been an actual fight. It could. It has to because.
She would have sensed it.
Yeah, Toph would have sensed something going on. Especially if she's so enlightened, she would have noticed the spiritual energy.
If she's so enlightened.
She's so enlightened.
Okay.
Enlightened.
Well, because she said she's tapped in.
Okay, we'll get there. We'll get there. Yeah, Toph enlightenment, big discussion topic. So then Tenzin comes to the South Pole. Korra is happy. And
I love their relationship.
I really hyper-noticed just Korra walking around and running. Like, I feel like they did that for a reason.
Yeah,
I think she's trying to show off too hard, so people don't worry. Yeah. So she can take her
this, and also they're demonstrating her physical recovery, which happened in Act 1.
Well, it's been like 2 years.
So it's not clear where we are right now. So we could be anywhere in the 6 month to 2 year territory. I believe this is my initial reaction to when they say dates is that anything before that date was in the previous date. So they don't say doesn't say 2 years until her letter with Asami. So
maybe
it's possible the Tenzin thing is still 6 months after.
I don't think she wouldn't be rolling around if it was.
Right. So I think it's probably somewhere within that
maybe a
6 months
later?
To 2 years period. Mm-hmm. The episode is not clear about that. So Korra shows off her fighting. She's okay, but then she has a flashback and falls down. Mm. And Tenzin wants to say, "Be patient." And Korra says, "I'll water smack you in the mouth."
Good.
That was
such a great. Okay. How did this come up before? Like, this is such a great line.
Can we just add water? Can we just add water to all forms of like? Can we add water punch you?
I'm gonna water kick you in the mouth.
Water kick you. Yeah, is that what we can do now?
I'm gonna water slice your throat.
Allie, sigh.
That's a good one.
Okay, all of you just going to logical extreme. Okay, so, and obviously this scene is paralleling one of the first scenes we see in the entire series when Korra fights the firebender showing off to the White Lotus.
Whereas, like, Gifts are on Tumblr, it probably exists.
Yeah, it's extremely similar in all forms, yes.
Exactly the same, except she, like, freaks out in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They played the same music, and they were just, they were pulling at your strings with this.
Mm-hmm. Because she, like, even burst into the fire in, like, the same motion.
Yeah.
But
she was excited, and then...
She wasn't powerful. Oh, my gosh. She got knocked backwards.
Sad. Okay. Okay.
You're gonna make me cry again.
Okay, let's... No podcast crying.
Okay,
you were always saying you want me to cry on the podcast, and now it might happen.
So. Well, that'll be interesting, at least. Okay, so now she's writing to Asami. Dear Asami...
Yes.
Kiarostami. Hey, little cutie.
Hey, little cutie. Hey, little cutie. How are you doing? Where'd you come from, little cutie? Yeah.
Where'd you come from?
Okay. Shots. Okay,
so put the goggles off for like 5 seconds so we can talk about her writing, and then you can put them back on.
Okay.
Can we what?
Should you take the shipper goggles off for 5 seconds and we can talk about it, and then you can put them back on.
No, I mean, yes, these aren't shipper. Well, no, we will legitimately discuss.
Our intro is shipper goggles.
Even the intro of the podcast, of course. So there's three shots that play during this sequence of Korra reading the letter to Asami. There's just this gorgeous shot of Korra bending on a cliff, I think on a cliff on a starry night.
No, you're too far.
No, I'm not too far. This plays during the Asami letter. So there's like shot of her bending, yeah, and it's just an incredible background. Then there's her Katara healing her in the pool. So showing, I guess, that the physical recovery continues. Maybe also a mental recovery, but I don't know if Katara can do that.
Probably not.
And then
Katara go to school for that.
Katara's the first psychologist in the Avatar.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh.
It could be. Yeah.
She also a neurosurgeon?
No, Sokka trained her.
Oh, yeah, Sokka was a...
Okay.
So, totally counts.
Time for another therapy.
Sokka and Nightmare and Dating.
Yeah, okay. Even to the sheep.
Then yes, there's a shot of her meditating on top of the building that we see at the end of the book one finale.
Like spirit mushrooms.
Which there's just a bunch of spirits around. That's the place in the book one finale at the very end.
But where she's bending on the first scene, though, that's where.
That's not the book one finale. That's some.
No, but it's where she's with Naga in the first episode.
That's possible. I haven't looked at it closely.
It's different just because of the lights, but I think Allie's right.
Because lights. Wow.
Because
the lighting is different.
So the contents of this letter, she says the past 2 years. So now we know we've skipped to 2 years from 6 months.
Remember when she said a couple weeks?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember because it was only like 10 minutes ago in the episode.
Well, I don't remember.
None of them have come down to visit her.
Right.
Seriously, how did none of them think she was a dog?
Right, so she hasn't ridden them back.
But freaked out. I mean, like, did you die? I would have
been like, wait, is she dead? Let's go see.
I assume they go to Tenzin, and Tenzin's told them, no, it's fine. Don't go. Give her space. Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. Because Korra says she can get around fine, but she doesn't have the Avatar state. She keeps having visions of Zaheer. Katara thinks a lot of this is in her head, so she has to meditate. But she's worried she'll never fully recover. That's her current state. This is like a shift in the episode, right? So before, a lot of it is like the physical recovery. And we know we play in the mental aspect of it a lot in Act 1. But now we're kind of shifting to what I prefer about this episode. I prefer everything from Dear Asami onwards, which is Korra's mental state, and also, which I think is the subtlety of this episode, Korra grasping with her being the Avatar. So this is a pure, actual manifestation of a metaphor. She's lost her ability to go in the Avatar state and her connection with Rafa. This is very analogous to her questioning her as the Avatar. She's not even really the Avatar right now. She's not doing anything Avatar-y other than bending all the elements, which she never loses the ability to do, it should be noted, despite losing the connection with Rafa. But we don't need to discuss that much. And I think this is... this isn't necessarily apparent unless you look below the surface level, although I think once you do at all, it's very clear. And I think this is what I was looking for from Korra's arc this season, and I'm very satisfied to see it manifest in this episode. Korra says, please don't tell Mako and Bullen I wrote you and not them. I don't want to hurt their feelings, but it's easier to tell you about this stuff. I don't think they'd understand. Okay, so I've basically seen three theories on why Korra wants to tell Asami, wants to write to Asami and not Mako and Bullen.
Because they're married.
So,
yes.
Option one is that Korra is much closer to Asami and much closer friends than either Mako or Bullen. Option two, Korra thinks only Asami would be able to relate to the identity crisis that she's going through.
Oh man, wait, I just got that.
Mako and Bullen.
Oh man.
Yeah. Option three, which I don't, and I don't like this one, but I will say it because Matt Patches wrote this in his review, is that only Asami would understand Korra what Cor is going through in terms of recovering after her being violated by a male force at the end of the last season. I don't think the show is presenting this, but I don't necessarily think that's an unreasonable assumption. I don't necessarily mean violated in any sort of sexual, just by like her being. And like as the males, they wouldn't understand it. I think that's not an unreasonable conclusion to draw, but I just don't think the show is presenting that.
Yeah, it makes sense, but just reading too into it.
Well, no, you're not reading into it too much. There's something there, right? So is
like
it one
it's
or
kind of there?
It's yeah. I think that's maybe kind of. I think it's probably a combination of one and two. So I agree. Asami is the only one who's had any sort of identity crisis like Chorus. I mean, certainly Bolin and Mako have gone through different jobs and.
They've lost their parents.
Lost their parents and stuff like that. But Cor has never connected emotionally with them about that. Whereas Asami has emotionally latched onto Cor after.
Do you think Cor is going through more of an identity crisis, or she's just struggling with the fact that she can't do her job?
Well, that kind of is an identity crisis, I think.
Yeah. I guess.
I think you just
like,
described
as long
it.
As you don't mean she's questioning her role. Like, do I need to, like...
I think with Cor... What I took away from this is that Bolin and Mako are both benders, and they both are at the height of, they're, like, the peak of what's going to happen to them. You know what I mean? Like, they are successful, they are strong, they are powerful, they're doing stuff in a really, really active way, where Asami's just
But Asami
kind of,
is, too.
That, yeah. But she's, like, still in Republic City, and she's doing what she was doing before. You know, she's changed. Yes.
It is possible that Cor, not being as good of a bender right now, doesn't, it's like, feel like talking to two great benders, right?
Yeah.
They're not great benders, though.
They're both pretty great benders. Bolin can lava bend, and Mako is pretty good.
You will lava bend, Ali? No, you can't.
As far as you know.
Okay. There's
I'm
two.
Sure if you could lava bend.
Put that in your reaction vid. You
I'm pretty thing. Sure.
There's two points I want to make about that I feel like should need to be made about Cora writing to Asami and not the other two. One, I think this demonstrates Cora having more of a close relationship, I think, to Asami than the other two, very clearly. I know that's only one of three possibilities I presented, but I think in any of the three possibilities, you want to include this one.
Well,
I feel like
that's a given. And
I think it's a given.
Ties,
right?
Like, that's a given, and then, like, the other two are, like, the ones that we can speculate about, but...
Yeah, but...
The
it,
fact
I
that
think
she's writing to...
Right, I agree. Point number two I want to make is that the fact that Cora, in being gone for 2 years, doesn't even feel like writing to Mako demonstrates that if the show is going to go a route of Cora and Mako being together at the end, they have a lot of work to do in demonstrating that Cora has any sort of feelings.
Not in Republic City until episode 7.
Well, did we hear the end of what I said, which is
no.
I actually would like to make a point here because this is something people are going to react to. Is that they have a lot of work to go through to demonstrating Cora's any sort of developing and a lot of development to go through for Cora's feelings for Mako, right? Because I don't think there's a sense of closeness there.
I honestly feel like they're going to cop out and just make them, like, have a time skip where they're together in the end. At this point. I really don't know what they're going
to
do.
The question is, is it possible to get to a point on screen?
I don't think so. Like, I was positive it was going to be canon up until this. Like, I honestly thought...
I mean, I still think it'll be canon. I just don't think it's going to be done very well. I really don't see it ending any other way except with a time skip.
So there's two
when they're together in the end.
There's two points to consider here in terms of the Makora. One is its role in the show currently, and two is what we think will happen based on what the crew has said and the cast. And I think number one does not demonstrate any sense of Makora is going to happen at the end. Where we are in the show right now is very far away from any sort of Makora ending. However, I agree with, I mean, just our friend Mare and posts on Tumblr a lot just about this. I agree with her and Makorians in that I think it's you can pretty easily read into what people are saying of what the cast and crew has said and conclude that there will be Mako at the end. However, I think we should only go so far with that. And also it's more of a, we'll see in like 3 months. Right. So,
and it's really hard, you know, and like, I hadn't even really like, I, you know, the interview thing you talked like that Mare talks about a lot of that. Talked about Makora is like, it's still a thing that, you know, that line is a big deal. That's going to, you know, they're still going to, whatever it was. I can't remember the exact line. Do you know what I'm talking about?
In the book 2 finale?
Yeah.
Like, mean, those kids are made for each other or whatever.
You mean what Cora says or what,
specifically what, I think it's what Mike says.
Yeah, Mike and Brian.
Those kids are made for each other or something.
So they say a bunch of stuff either way. Yeah, they seem very...
Meant for each other. I think
that actual scene does not contain...
Yeah.
Despite what McCorns would think. I don't think that scene is inherently hinting at.
It's like, for me, like,
that scene isn't been on the commentary, they said something.
I think the commentary does, though.
That's what I'm talking about. And my thing is, if I didn't know anything about the commentary, I wouldn't have any, I'd be like, no, McCorns is not going to happen. People are like, no, it's not, they're not showing it on, it's not on screen at all in book 3 or book 4. Like, there's like zero Makora.
Where we are on screen.
They could have like an Atlantis The Lost Empire ending where it's impossible. You've seen this, okay, right?
Yeah,
where,
that's like, what I'm saying.
It's all ending and they just hold hands and there's like a hug and that's it. And that would be fine.
But then time skip 30 years later, they have a kid or something.
Which would be okay. I mean,
I just want Makora to
get
kids,
married
okay.
in the second movie, so who cares?
Where,
I mean, like, could,
oh, that movie was so bad.
Spoilers. Where we are.
That is like my favorite movie.
Let's
I'm going to kill you.
Please,
the
please.
The second one
please.
Was so bad.
Oh, the second one, yes.
Oh,
one.
Where we are in the show right now is probably extremely far from.
But, like, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be so overtly romantic to be a core ending. Like, they don't have you making out and, like, oh my god, I love you and love you forever.
I also think they're even very far from a like, subtle moment.
That's the thing. They're far from it.
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to say.
Let's just not have any romance ever
that's
again.
That's how I feel about it.
Well, so then the next...
Ever again.
So I think this would also lead, as we've seen in the Kurosami tag, is this is actually pretty close to some sort of close relationship between the two. Kura continues...
They are very...
Kurosami continues to be the one Kura is considering and writing to and stuff like that.
It's so cute.
And it's really cute.
Like, not even as a shipping thing. I'm
just
so glad.
Well, also as a shipping thing, though.
Also as a shipping thing, but, like, just as a friendship, I'm so happy they're doing this, like, keeping up with it, like, in book 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
I could not be happier.
We did speculate in the podcast that they might throw this their friendship from book 3 out the window.
I really thought they would just drop it and be like, whatever, we should
do. That's a good point to make. They have not done that, so that's good. Okay.
So far, keep your fingers crossed, guys.
Yeah. Well, we'll see when Katora even meets up with Makoa Bolan and Asami again. So we'll see.
Is that a new ship?
Again, it is possible. It's not until episode 7.
There's this
one fan art from really early on. Anyway,
remember when everybody shipped Tenzin and Korra?
Yeah,
we
that's,
didn't know
that's
not talk about
that's
that.
Literally, everyone is like, "Oh, remember
that?" I was on that boat. Anyway, moving on.
So now
that ship has sailed.
We're at the next scene. Korra's at dinner with her parents. They have this really long dinner
like,
table. Mom, and
Dad, I have to tell you something. And I was like, "Oh my god."
I'm
pregnant.
She's like,
I thought she was going to be like, I'm gay.
For example, yes, that's
okay.
Like that was like
guys,
a like flash in my head. Like, oh.
Yeah, that's what it, I mean. It Mom, Dad, probably wouldn't have made sense in the context of the episode, but
it wouldn't have.
Anyway,
I'm sure it would have.
Oh, okay. So she wants to go back to her public city alone, and they're like, okay, and she leaves Naga.
I wonder if that.
Sure, Korra.
Okay, I'm mad she left Naga. I'm so angry.
Yeah, same.
Because I don't see why.
She's letting go of her old self. Naga's part of her old identity.
Naga
it's why she's only
is her best friend.
For real.
Well, obviously she's not making good decisions.
Naga is her life companion. Okay, if you get rid of your old self, are you going to get rid of your dog?
Yes.
I don't think so.
Wow, I'm not
evil.
Going
well, it's
for
like,
fire.
Like, never, the only times Aang was separated from Appa is when Appa was stolen from him. Why are you leaving Naga behind? This isn't okay.
Also,
it's
Korra and
Tom.
Like why would you take Naga to Republic City if, like, you are supposedly going there?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like,
how did
her parents know she's the Avatar?
Out?
And if she's traveling around as a Water Tribe girl, traveling along a giant polar bear dog, it's gonna...
But, like, how did her parents not figure that out?
Well, so she wanted to go on that little boat alone, so she couldn't have brought
Well, she was going to the Republic City.
Yeah, she
then...
was going. Like, she changed her mind after she'd already gotten there.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't know why she didn't bring her.
But no.
Hello! That's what I'm saying.
Korra did not want to bring Naga, because she didn't think she'd be going.
Reiterate what I'm talking
no,
about.
No, she still went.
She
like,
still
no, like,
went.
She was there.
I know,
she
but...
She went to Republic City.
That's a good point to make. Did she think she'd end up in Republic City?
Probably. Well, it looked like she was sailing there. Like, she,
sure,
the reason
but
she turned around is because that was there.
I understand, but she could have just wanted to go there, like, secretly look how things are going and then, you know, leave, right?
To look at Aang's statue and be like, yep, it's still there.
I think she had every intention of going and then
I do too.
She kind of ran away. Like, she was just trying to get away from those.
That's why she went to every place, because.
Yeah, she's trying to get away from it. And then she finally was like, I'm going to take it out.
It was like, oh my god.
Either way, she can't bring Raga on the small boat.
No, I just realized it's like the Lion King 1.5 when they're looking for a place to live. It's always bad. She just keeps moving around because that thing is always following her.
Is. Okay. Looking beyond the surface level, is. Dark Avatar Korra manifesting, preventing her from going to Republic City, a manifestation of her doubts and wanting to return to, or being able to return to her old life.
Probably.
I think that's basically what that was.
Agreed.
Because it keeps following her everywhere after that. Like, everywhere.
Like, everywhere. Anyway. So now we're at...
interferes in the moments where she would have had no problem beforehand, like in her, when she was like old Korra, air quotes.
Old Korra.
Air quotes. Like, we're at this fishing village now. This old guy, you're the Avatar Incha, he says.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
He has a picture. He wants Korra's picture for his wall of avatars, which is just one picture. How can this be a wall of avatars if there's just one picture?
Well,
he's going to live forever.
I would call it wall of avatars if I had a picture of Aang like that.
Wall of Avatar. Anyway.
Maybe he's early in his selecting days. Jeez Louise.
But he's an old man. Does he expect to live forever so he can, like,
just let me pass
it on to his children.
So, it's going to be a family business.
Yes.
Collect it. So the picture there is of Aang doing his airbending trick from the Warriors of Kyoshi on the seaweed wraps, which he talks about.
I could not be happier they did that.
So first let's establish the seaweed wraps. He says Aang was a big fan and he named them Aang rolls, and it's one of his biggest.
I feel like this is you.
He's one of his biggest sellers, and they ain't even got fish in them. So, first of all, we should point out that this is sushi.
Aang
this
vegetarian.
Is yes, I am aware of this. This is fishless sushi, and it's called Aang rolls. So, it's sushi is just Aang rolls.
For the record,
the
they don't have that here.
Japan, you mean, or in the world? Because
in
they
Japan,
do.
In Japan,
I'm sure they have cucumber sushi somewhere in Japan.
I've asked, and my friend didn't know what that was. So
okay, well, I love cucumber sushi. That's great. Seaweed wrap sushi. Yeah.
They
anyway,
have cucumbers.
Anyway, yeah. Obviously, I love this. And Aang is doing that on the sushi
the
instead
trick.
Of
the fact that
the
he
marble
posed
trick, which is
this
great.
Picture, and this is what he wanted.
This is
planned. This. This is
yeah.
What
so
he
this
wanted.
Is this is
frame this.
These, Aang, oh my god.
These are the type of moments I don't really expect them to. Like have or pull so off so well, but this was basically great. Perfect. And if you compare this to a shot of Aang from Warriors of Kyoshi, it's the same thing, the same facial expression, and seeing older Aang do
that. Logged in like that a billion times.
This is the most I've connected to older Aang because in the past, older Aang hasn't really been shown with
because
his fun loving side.
Yeah.
And
he's just old.
Yeah, so I haven't really connected that to Aang as much, but this is clearly Aang to me, so that's great. Yeah, this was one of my favorite moments of the episode for sure.
It was
so
amazing.
Great.
The
next thing made me so angry, though.
Well, then he takes a picture of Korra, and Korra smiles.
No, not that.
And it's really awkward.
Korra is so awkward.
It's awkward, and it's upside down. But yeah.
She is not photogenic. It's great.
It's great.
Why is it upside down?
I don't know.
Because that's how film works.
I guess,
yeah. The old-fashioned cameras, they use mirrors, and it was complicated. Whatever.
It was complicated.
That's how they work,
yeah. Upside down, and then they flip.
The old guy says he would have loved to have met Kyoshi, taking down a shark squid with one hand. Now, that's a lady I'd like to get to know. That I love that line.
That was just pretty great.
That line's great. I feel you.
Makes
me
happy anyway. But then that line was even
that
better.
Line's great.
It was great, but I feel bad for Korra because he was like, "Oh, you're cool, but I'm like Kyoshi."
Yeah.
So what's the difference between
rude
the presumably fisherman here and his wife, and the fisherman and wife in the storm in Avatar?
This guy is less.
Well,
of
the
a
other people
butthole.
Are dead, so that's big.
Wow, true.
Okay, yeah, this guy's less crotchety. I agree. Yeah. Okay.
This guy's less of a
well, this guy's all about the Avatar, and everyone else is like, you left.
Yeah,
ugh.
That's true. It's an interesting parallel. I wonder if they're thinking... I feel like the character designs are probably something.
He's not even a fish... Well, is he a fisherman, or is he just...
Presumably, he's a fisherman. What else are you going to do?
I don't know. If they
wow,
sell the fish.
Why are you
there's no fish in the Aang rolls. He says, different from
maybe
my rest of my
rolls
stock.
Fish. He doesn't just sell Aang rolls.
Korra asked for him lobster crab rolls.
Yeah, she got lobster.
There were
whatever,
fish
yeah.
sitting
not
there.
Rolls. She wanted lobster crabs.
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
he
I kind
just
of
has
want
fish.
Food
yeah.
now.
Okay, anyway.
did you guys not see the, like,
Yeah,
the thing.
It was there.
Yeah,
the
there
little...
were fish there too.
This is what we're
yeah,
saying. We all agree. We're just arguing yeah, with each other about how much
lobster
we agree.
Lobster mac and cheese.
Oh my god!
So there's
so there's
thieves, and Korra tries to take them down, but
I'm mad that he was like, "Oh, the Avatar's here. Go do it."
And then Korra's like, "Yeah, okay." And then she just gets
yeah,
knocked,
okay. And then she
gets knocked down without fighting at all. So
like one second later.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
No,
I just,
baby.
I felt.
Are you
just,
sure she's the Avatar?
I just yeah, wanted to die. I was so upset.
It made me so angry. Like, did they not hear that the Avatar was poisoned?
Probably.
Like,
not.
Do they think she's okay?
Probably.
But like,
I mean, there's a good
that's
chance.
That's
kind of
big
no
news.
Knows.
Yeah, it's
well,
well,
a few
no,
years
was
later.
She was at the coronation, well, not sure, coronation, the thing know, for Jenora.
Yeah.
Jenora
so tattoo
public
thing.
Events.
Yeah.
Also, 2 years later. The world's savior, like, I think you would hear something in the news about her.
Well, there's
know,
also a chance, like, we say papers. There also, we also don't, we see all these metropolises, but there's also a good chance that the village they were in isn't that, like, communication
yeah,
might not be the best. They're also by
the
swamp.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, they're like, by the swamp.
Well, we don't know if they're by the swamp.
And the time actually would make it even more less, make it even more likely that they weren't aware.
I don't know if these people are by the swamp. It's not clear. The one well, we know by the swamp is the Earth.
Oh no, you're
boat.
Right. Yeah, no, this is just some random.
This
like,
is just some place. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the first place. She,
Island.
This is the first place. I thought this was Kyoshion. This is the first
that's
place the she goes to after sailing for Republic
yeah,
City. Okay.
Also, her boat is the coolest thing ever. Just for the record, I want one.
It's okay, like, noted. So now, now she goes to
wow,
yes, she goes to Republic City. She sees Dark Avatar there and turns around.
Nightmare Avatar. You call it Dark Avatar one more time.
Nightmare
you
Avatar.
This is literally what Brandon calls it. So
water slap you.
You know, water slap me in the mouth. Yeah.
I set you on water.
Water.
That was great. You need context. The Brit says set you on fire, and then that's hilarious. Okay. So. This is the first time Korra sees Mrs. Dark Avatar, correct?
Mrs. Dark
Avatar?
Who's she married to?
Yeah, who's she married to, exactly.
Unalaq the Dark Avatar.
Are you implying she's married to Batu?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mrs. Dark Avatar.
Miss Dark Avatar. And then she, so then she turns around and she goes somewhere. She's like, okay, this isn't working.
Okay,
let's go over Korra's head right now, right? So...
She was a giant pile of LOL, nope.
She realizes that she's not physically able to fulfill her previous duties when she can't capture the thieves, and then she sees her manifestation of what she's lacking, blocking her way to her old life, so she rejects her old life and cuts her hair and tries to blend into a new life.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Asian cutting hair symbolism.
Yeah. Hooray. Then we have this new track by Jeremy Zuckerman playing over
I
the previous scene and the Korra haircut, which Mare called, I guess. And yeah,
it was in another scene before this, though.
It was in the previous scene and continued into this scene. It starts, I think, when she's going to Republic City, right?
It's really interesting because when she actually like cuts her hair and like slides the knife through the hair, like the music stops and you just hear the hair being cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that this episode is probably the most Jeremy Zuckerman dependent episode in the entire series. And
oh,
I think
definitely.
I think he just does a tremendous job with this. Like this is one of the times when you think what would the show be without
music.
Without Jeremy Zuckerman specifically, right? And also I saw some in I'm watching this internet show Ruby, RWBY, and there's one of the like the creator
oh,
that
I
was talking about
that.
It's really good. He was talking about just that especially for animated shows, music is so like so essential to just
oh, yeah.
they like live and die by their soundtracks and stuff. And I think that couldn't be more true for Jeremy Zuckerman and Korra, especially this episode, which is so emotional and so dependent on the soundtrack. I guess the question would be, is it too manipulative? And I think he doesn't cross that line. Which
yeah.
is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So
it augments.
So
it doesn't like it doesn't necessarily make the moments. It augments them a lot. Like it makes them so much better.
Actually,
like, I was
thinking
about this before like the episode happened. Like I was going back and like watching the finale of book three, and like the music in that is awesome. And because it's a finale, like you know they
yeah.
have to do a lot of stuff. But I feel like for episodes like this, it's more important.
I actually think that
yeah.
it doesn't necessarily augment. I think it almost like is essential to the scene, right? Like I think augmenting like. Says like this isn't this that the show that's the show could function without this, and I don't think this episode could
but
function
it,
without
like,
the music.
It couldn't. Not
well,
this,
I'm
yeah.
in certain scenes like this scene. I don't think could have like her cutting
yeah.
her hair. Like the music was definitely essential to this
mm-hmm.
one scene.
mean, that would be like without coloring, you know, like what are we talking about? Non-essential. It's music.
It's and I think it's especially striking because Jeremy Zuckerman goes through the soundtracking process so alone. Like it's just him doing this. I don't really think Brian has that much of an influence. I think he gets the cut of the episode. It's the, like the last thing that happens. He gets the episode without the music and he comes up with the music for it and it's all on his own. And it's pretty incredible. I could be,
he's a genius.
He really is. Okay. And he's just incredibly improved too, even from Avatar, which was also so good.
Avatar was really beautiful, but this stuff is like,
I am scared for the book 4 finale music.
They're probably
I'm terrified, but so excited.
Are they doing the book 4 finale music yet? I think they're probably
starting it now.
Yeah,
right?
So this is going on as we speak. Jeremy Zuckerman working on the music for the finale. Okay,
right, plotting our demise.
Studio. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, and now we're in Act 3. So now Korra goes to the spirit portal. Is this in the North or South Pole?
I was not expecting this to happen this episode.
Yeah, I think it's the North.
I'm sure we can tell by comparing the backgrounds, but like I didn't do so.
Yeah.
Then that tree was on the left side. No.
I meant like the trees, like the all the branches.
It would make sense that this is
around the portal.
It would make sense that this is the North because Republic City is so close.
Yeah, she
to the
left
north.
The South too.
Well, she could have gone back, but yeah. So then she goes into the portal.
I doubt it.
She goes
she's trying to escape. She's not gonna go nowhere.
She meditates in the Tree of Time.
I was right.
Who called this? Brit, you called
it?
Yeah,
this is Brit.
Yes,
yeah.
Brit called it.
Little spirits.
They're the cutest things.
So they're
they will live in my house.
In the credits, these are called the Light Spirit, which is the important one, and Skeptical Spirit, which they name minor characters based on
Light and Skeptical Spirit.
They name them, and it should be noted these two spirits are actually voiced by like 10-year-old boys, which is adorable.
I live for like these little spirits who are voiced by kids. Like, oh my god!
Yeah, they're actually voiced by kids, right?
I live for that.
Morgan Gingrich and Matt Charles. There we go.
And started talking, and I was like, oh, this isn't Miyazaki anymore.
Yeah. I think it's a really good decision to actually have them voiced by kids. Good job.
Pretending to be children.
I mean, don't they always like normally have kids voiced by kids on this show?
Well, these aren't kids, right?
Well, I mean, little things.
There's not too much. There's not a ton of precedent for cute spirits. No, I think they have for spirits before. So, but they haven't had as much of a major role.
Rita Lyle doesn't count. She was a mushroom.
So there's not a ton of precedent for those two voices of the spirits. The skeptical spirit says there's no Rava energy.
Rava's not inside here. Rava's inside the Nightmare Avatar.
The Nightmare Avatar isn't real. So what's going on? How come you've been away for so long? She says she's hurt pretty bad and lost touch with the Avatar spirit. She came to the Tree of Time hoping to reconnect with Rava and turn on the Avatar state again, but it's not working.
Like it's a switch. I didn't like that she said turn on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that
the light doesn't know what's going on.
The light spirit like sits in her lap and it's adorable, and then she pushes him off.
Well, it's interesting that the other spirit's like, oh, that explains it. So it's like you know more than Korra does. This is weird.
Well, not really. Well, yeah, their portrayal of the spirits in the spirit world actually I think has been fairly consistent in them not being omniscient or knowing any more than humans do, I think.
Well,
actually.
No, I just meant that her, like, him, whatever, the little spirit goes.
Her, him, whatever.
Yeah, whatever, go, like, says, you know, oh, that would explain why I didn't sense any Rava energy, so it's like, what does that mean? Like,
right, so they can probably, they have extra abilities because they're spirits, but they don't know
like,
more
yeah,
than
that's
else.
What I was talking about. Like, I mean, obviously, I do agree with you that the spirits have been portrayed, like, very consistently.
So
it was just interesting like that the spirit said that.
So Korra like puts the spirit down, gets up, and I think this I would say is the part of the episode which I think is most relatable, most connect to, most emotional for me. When Korra, I think it's interesting because it's in such a like a cutesy spirit world scene as Korra is like, no one can help, nothing's worked, and I need to figure this out on my own.
Which is why she goes away.
Which is why it's called Korra Alone.
Right.
Maybe she'll meet Zuko and they'll have a life-changing field trip again. And she'll be like, Zuko, how did you deal with being a failure? I need advice.
His honor.
It's just a complete, no one can help and nothing's worked. It's just, that's very real to me. Yeah, this is the part that's most
I feel honest. Very much in my personal life.
Mm-hmm. So she's still seeing So now we have a montage. She's still seeing Dark Avatar Korra places. Dear mom and dad. And she talks
dear
about
mom and dad, I'm
lying to you. Yes.
She writes dear the letter diary, she had apathetic. In the previous episode. Yeah, mood apathetic. Yeah.
She's like, don't
wait, what is that from?
That's I'm an emo kid.
Oh, that's God, that's so old. Jeez, mood.
We're old people.
That's like the flash video from like 2004 or something. Oh my god.
Wait, Sam, what was the quote you said just now?
Dear diary, mood apathetic.
Oh,
my life is spiraling downward.
Yeah, exactly. That's so old. Jeez. Okay. So there's three places Korra visits in this montage. Three extremely opposite.
Can you talk about how it's easy for her to write a lying letter to her parents? Then I don't feel well, and I'm gonna. It's
right.
A,
so
like,
I think
she has to write a letter to Asami. Like, this is very telling of her mental state at the moment.
No, I actually think it's a great point. Like, I don't think this would be.
Like, I think it's a good thing. Like,
I don't think this would be in character for Korra previous to this episode. I don't think Korra is like this is like indicative of a pathological liar. Like, she's just very easily writing this. It seems like very naturally, and Korra is a pretty honest character. So she's just been pretty scarred.
I mean, it's also kind of hard to tell when you're lying when it's in writing.
Well, yeah.
The way Janet Varney reads it is so genuine.
Yeah, that's the other part.
So I think that's what caused me to think that she's just completely, she's just so easily lying, it seems like.
I know that's the reason, like, I felt that way, because...
Well, definitely, yeah.
This is one of those times, I think, where the voice actor's read completely changes how a scene would be. So I wonder if it was in the script, read this genuinely, or if this was a decision by Miss Varney herself.
Yes,
continuing on with this theme. Okay, so anyway, she goes through ice? What is that? What do I mean? What's the scene where she's going over ice?
I reblogged the gift set, so...
So you can look for it. Anyway, I definitely remember, the volcano.
It's ice. She's like sailing, and then there's volcano.
She goes over the volcano, and then she goes to the desert where she sees the Rava Mirage, and she's like, no,
okay.
Rava.
When she said Rava, I almost lost
Rava.
It.
Rava. Yeah, anyway.
Rava.
Rava. I'll see you soon, Rava.
Vatu makes
okay,
it.
Okay, but first
die.
Of all.
Where's Vatu, by the way? Anyway, yes.
Yeah, for real.
Who's Avatar Korra?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Okay, but wait, first of all, how did she go to all these places by herself?
Right, so this is.
With just really a backpack.
Backpack.
Korra the Explorer.
So this is the time skip, right? This is over the course of a year we're seeing. So she's journeying around.
I thought
world.
It was the 6 months.
No.
Tan Rock is like, Korra left 6 months ago.
Oh, yeah.
So that, okay, that's inconsistent.
Oh, so it was only 6 months? Oh, my goodness.
She's been going. She's been booking it.
Let me look.
Going ham.
For real.
Okay, so that means in between...
And she doesn't even have Naga. Like,
you're right.
She has a boat.
That's my
she can't
point.
Sail,
like,
and she can't even sail everywhere.
In between Dear Asami and I'm leaving dinner party.
Dear Asami.
Where there are 6 months then.
I'm leaving dinner party?
Yeah. Okay.
It wasn't a party, I don't think.
Anyway.
It was a party.
So that was...
dinner.
So that was 6 months,
ain't
I guess.
No party like a water tribe party, because a water tribe party don't stop. Okay, never mind.
The roof is on fire.
It's 3:30.
We don't need no water.
So now we're almost in the present.
Almost.
Korra says, "I am ending this," and then chases the.
I think this is ending. What happened to her black eye?
So this is an incredibly brilliant, brilliant sequence here, and I'm just astounded by how well they connected the end of last episode to this episode.
She says,
"I'm ending this." She chases after Miss Dark Avatar Korra to the arena.
Hi,
and... I thought she was Mrs.
Well, now she is divorced, and she fights.
Okay, so when did the divorce happen? Like,
she fights.
She was in the volcano.
Yeah,
or?
It was in the volcano. It's traumatic. She fights. Okay. So it turns out she's fighting.
Her
vision instead of the fighter in the arena.
It hurt so much, but it was so like.
Yeah,
awesome.
that was brilliant.
I like called that she was talking to herself though. Like I thought she was talking to herself like in her mind, but like she was actually like
talking to herself.
Too real, man. It's
and this is the big part for me that was like the structure of this episode is insane. Like it's so incredible that the way they weave everything together. Because you know you'd think that going between all these time jumps would be really confusing, but it's not because they wrap it all together and it's amazing. And hurts.
No, I agree. It's I think this is where the structure really comes together of the episode.
This is like obviously
that's
the content of
my mind.
That's what makes this episode for me is the structure
This is I would
the flashbacks, and they did it so well.
I would compare this scene and then the flashing to the present comparable to the end of the Stakeout, in where it's like, okay, now everything's coming together, right? In the third act at the end of it.
This was a lot better than that, though, I
for
think.
Sure.
Yes.
Because that was shock factor. This was everything makes sense and we're going to rip
your mind. Exactly.
I mean, it's hard to compare 2-minute sequences. I would say the third act of this episode is better than the third act.
Well, I mean, it's not, because like Lena said, that was just for shock. This is like, oh,
I don't...
Dylan just wants to like it and doesn't like to hear reason.
What? Like,
he doesn't like to hear my reason.
Right, so I think that the actual present flash forward, right? So now the next scene, we're actually in the present. We chase the dog to the swamp and we go, poof, poof, poof. And I don't think that's like
really accurate boys. Good job.
I don't think like that's emotionally cathartic. I just think that's like it's like, oh, the plot's the now we're actually in the present, right? So I didn't find any amount of I thought the previous scene was really
I meant like that's what I was talking about, like the switch, like tying that.
Well, they're together. I think you have to tie them together because they're both in the catch up process. And so now we're actually in the present. She chases the dog to the swamp. It turns out to be Light Spirit. He says, not
someone
a what
said it, what if it's
not a what, but a who.
Why did...
Toph is like, hey, Light Spirit, go find Korra for me. I need to talk to her. We need to have a chat.
Jeff says, in
how
his thoughts...
How do we not talk Calder there, though?
Presumably before this point in the episode, he said, I thought for a sec the spirit puppy was some sort of age-regressed Naga.
That's what I thought.
I did too, yeah.
But apparently not. Although
maybe that's like a flashback or her meeting.
Maybe Naga has a spirit.
I'm calling
and...
it.
Maybe
I'm
the
Naga Junior.
Well, I think we've talked about before how the Naga like could be reincarnated.
Like I was thinking that the spirit can like obviously tap into her subconscious, and maybe it picked a creature that she would consider.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah,
that's a chance.
She misses Naga because she didn't take her with her for some reason.
You know what? Korra's making a lot of bad decisions right now.
She really is.
Too hard.
Okay, so.
Or she doesn't give Naga treats.
The swamp.
She
okay.
Naga.
Well, who cares?
Maybe
so
she
now
wanted
we're...
to keep her at home.
Oh, wow, Dylan. We've never had a dog before.
More important. I have not. It's sad. We have more important stuff to get to. So she sees the Miss Dark Avatar Korra in the swamp. She says, you're just in my mind. You're not real.
At least she's aware, so she doesn't have, like, a cognitive disorder.
Well, so she's not, is this awareness, or is this her repeating a mantra, right? Like, this is her trying, this is her trying to, like, tell herself that.
It doesn't disappear, it attacks her.
It then attacks her,
so. It shows the structure, like, it shows, like, the struggle of that, like, does she really believe that, or...
Yeah. It's not clear. She's trying to tell herself that, but in spite of it, she's, so she's attacked, she goes through a few things. This, it seems longer, but, everything
intense, man.
Everything from the swamp to this walking into the swamp to the end of the episode is only 3 minutes, and then the scene with Toph takes up a minute. So this is actually only a 2-minute, maybe a minute long fight sequence. I don't love having a random fight sequence here. It's like, oh, this is Korra battling with herself. Is it? I don't
She's
know.
In a swamp.
I don't
really
know.
Enjoyed it.
It's
poison, though.
It seems like this is supposed to be Korra's already. Hallucinations combined with the visions that the swamp naturally gives you present this crazy thing that's happening to her. And I don't think it's supposed to be a physical manifestation, despite the fact that she is physically fighting with it.
I thought it was a good fight sequence.
I think it was fine. I think it's a little...
Especially with the poison.
And, like, the chain. That was...
Honestly, I'm not about fight sequences that much. I really like this one.
Yeah, I think it's fine. It seems longer than it is, I think, because of how non-fighty this episode is.
I think
is,
how long it is really unimportant.
Well, no.
But we should move on and talk.
Well,
about
I don't think we should have a 5-minute fight sequence in this episode, right? So I think that's what
we
I'm
didn't.
Trying to say. Correct. She gets sucked down into the poison. So what we said before was that what I think is happening
doesn't
is she
look like that, but we'll just ignore that.
It's interesting because she like reaches up out of the poison and then the tentacle, and she like drags her hand out, and then the poison comes down to like take her. I don't know. That was boarded weirdly because it's not like she's being dragged down. It's like it's weird. I don't know. So what I think is happening here is that she's actually just passed out, and this is all in her head, right? So she passed out beforehand, and then we get all of this, and then she passes out in the vision as well.
That's not how I read it, but
well, I don't think she's physically moving around the swamp, right? Like, because she does get hit, though. That's the thing. Like, she can't be
in
hit,
her we but... don't know if I mean she gets hit in her mind.
She could just be like throwing herself all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's just a really
good fight actor. Because we don't know what's actually happening.
Yeah.
Outside of her perspective.
I don't think, like, I think either
it's
one.
Fun it's like that episode of Teen Titans where Robin was like,
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
So I think the important thing is that the important thing is that she's
causing herself pain.
She's not physically fighting the thing. That's the important part. It doesn't.
No, she could be like she could believe she's physically fighting.
She's not actually fighting something that is physical. That's my point. That's the that's the important thing here.
It's not real in the way we would consider something to be real, but it's like she believes it's not real
in the way we'd consider something to be real. I like that. So then she's passed out. She gets. She wakes up in a what seems to be a cave, but what I speculate to be the banyan grove tree in the swamp.
Yeah,
This is the tree that Hugh says that he meditated under to achieve enlightenment. It's the big one in the middle of the swamp.
So did Toph just hollow it out?
Pretty much. She was like, I'm going to live in this.
Yeah, of course Toph was like, this place is perfect.
I think if you look at the... I think if you look in the background, it looks like a tree. I'm not sure, though.
Yeah. I think it does.
I think
obviously
it looks
like
a tree.
Like, there's like roots and stuff.
Well, I don't think it's obvious. I only had I only figured this out on 4th rewatch, so it took me a while. I found you passed out in the mud. I'm pretty tapped into the goings-on around here. That doesn't
sound
like goings-on. I mean, it's
fine. Yeah, she can goings-on, like, that struck me the second time I listened to it. I was
that
like,
doesn't seem very Toph-ish, yeah.
It's an odd.
Well, Toph like is, like, yeah, she's like 80.
We were good friends in your previous life. I can't believe it. Toph, nice to see you again, Twinkle Toes.
It was adorable. And then I screeched.
Only then you screeched?
Well, no, like, I, like, super screech because she said Twinkle Toes. Like, insane screech.
Okay.
It was adorable. If you don't think it's adorable, you have no soul.
I agree.
Britt, that's quite a pronouncement.
Dylan, you don't have a soul.
I would say that,
we've established
ignoring...
Oh my God. I just had this thought about, how, Aang in the flashback and Out of the Past is like, I'm 40, and then it's like, I'm not even Aang anymore, and you still call me Twinkle Toes? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's pretty great, yeah.
Damn it, Toph.
So, first of all, I think this design on Toph is pretty good.
Yes.
She still has the eyes. She looks old. She's still
I would hope she'd still have the eyes.
She still has
the eyes. By the way, I achieved sight.
She would regain her eyesight that she never had or something.
Well, I don't know what happens when you reach enlightenment, right? That's the thing we actually need to discuss is, no, like, I think that's a legitimate good transition to...
Are you kidding? You don't... Oh my god. If she was born blind, it's not like a... spirituality thing. It's a biological thing.
Well,
she can see now.
She's fucking childlike. She's like cataracts or something. We're just not gonna.
The question is, what's going on with Toph in the swamp, right? Like,
okay, book 4, Toph becomes unblind.
There's some sort of there's certainly some sort of spiritual connection for a few reasons. One, it was enlightenment was mentioned previously. Two, she's probably in the banyan grove tree where he reached enlightenment.
And she
says she's Yoda.
Three, she says she's tapped into the goings on around here. Four, the spirit.
I thought that was just supposed to be like a reference to who she was.
I think she means it in the sense in the swamp where Hugh like knew everything that was happening in the swamp. Everything's connected. Four, the little spirit knows about Toph and knows that Korra should go see
her. Usually Toph would say like sense or like she would have used a bit more of like a concrete word than like tapped.
I think that's a reference to the swamp, the episode. Yeah.
That's what I got out of it. Like Dylan, you realize I'm agreeing with you, right?
Talking to Sam.
I disagree. That's just me.
Okay, Sam.
I don't know.
It's anyway.
Just weird word choice. A lot of weird words.
The problem is I don't. So the problem with this is right is that enlightenment is not a thing that's been mentioned more than, I believe, twice in the Avatar world. So we don't really know what's going on here. We also don't know that. I still doubt they'll explore it too much. Because it's going to be about Korra, not about Toph. Toph, we might like tangentially learn about
Toph
this.
I just hope Toph leaves. I want Toph to
lecture Korra on how she should get all the D because Toph did that when she was her age.
What's to happen? We didn't see Toph when she was Korra's age. What are you talking about?
She's going to tell Korra about how she, when she was her age, she got all the D.
Why? What is going on in your head right now? I don't understand.
What's going on?
It's 4 a.m. here.
Okay.
Yeah, that's acceptable.
Anyway, yeah. So,
oh my god, the
Toph.
Sun's rising.
I just
the
hope
sun
it's
is
not
rising.
Like a,
why is it
I just
rising?
Want it to be like a Korra, like Korra is with Toph and then Korra leaves. Like, I want like them to leave together. I want Toph to.
Okay, so
I need Toph and Lin interacting.
Too. So of note is that we see a scene in the trailer of the Orchids going into the swamp. So it seems like that's what's going to happen next, is that they're going to try to track Korra down. But I don't know how they would know that she's in the swamp, so... Janora can't just do that anywhere.
Yes, she can.
Unless she's spiritually linked with Korra enough that she can find her wherever.
She totally maybe, is.
Wasn't she spiritually linked with Korra once or twice?
Maybe once or twice. Sent a letter via a messenger hawk.
She did that during Harmonic Convergence and in the book 3 finale, so we're fine. She'll do it.
She'll do it. Okay.
I have faith in her, Dylan.
I assume, excuse me, don't insult my faith in Janora. That is as real as anything else could be.
I'm insulting you for not having faith in your favorite, apparently.
Don't question. Don't question. Okay. Any comments on Toph?
I hope this doesn't turn into just, like, Toph, like, in a sense, beating sense in the Korra, and, like, Korra being suddenly okay now. I still want Korra to struggle. I don't want her to just meet Toph, be like, oh, everything's okay now. Since Toph, helped me.
I do want Toph to help her, but I don't want her to be, like, you know, completely okay.
Yeah. I don't think that'll happen, so I think...
Toph is gonna be Yoda, pretty much.
Yes.
I don't think it'll happen.
Like, and I think she'll, like, I think this Toph helping her will be, like, at least 2 episodes. Which is good.
Like, I don't know. I feel like it would be 1.
I don't know.
Because, I mean, we only have how many more left? 12 after this. No, we only have 11 after this.
But as far as we know, she's not she's not in Republic City until episode 7, so I don't know. Yeah, so.
I don't know do you guys think Toph is going to, like, leave the swamp? I feel like
I really hope so. I'm afraid she's going to stay.
What if Toph is dead?
She can't really be Yoda. She can't die. No.
Oh, God. She can't die before Katara, first of all.
Exactly, yeah.
What if she's already dead? And, like,
great.
She's just a spirit, like.
Korra is gonna
Toph
clothes. So
that's my god! I feel like that's gonna be a cop out. Like that's how the spirit knew about her because she's in the spirit world.
I think I read that on Tumblr earlier.
God, no! I don't want it. No, Toph can stay alive.
So I think there's a lot of places to go with Toph, and I don't think it's necessarily important to this episode. So I guess I would want. I think
not
that was.
To this episode,
it was good. It was good to just list some stuff, but now I want to focus back in on Korra alone. So my thing with this type of structure at the end, right? So I think this episode also kind of has the last 3 minutes problem, and I've discussed. I just gave it that name, but I've discussed this on the podcast before, which is where an episode has kind of a. I don't know if it's a trope. I think I made it up.
It's a podcast trope.
So this is something that happens in Korra episodes where they're very focused for the first 19 minutes of the episode, and then in the last 3 minutes they go into something else. This can be seen most prominently in A New Spiritual Age, which features the problematic end where Unalaq kidnaps Janora and a bunch of stuff happens. This can also be seen in one of the 4 mic scripts that I was talking about in the Metal Clan, where we get into Lin's problems at the end of the episode. Somewhat different than what the rest of the episode is focusing on. Somewhat counter to a narrow focused episode on a certain subject. This can be seen
to the Southern Raiders too.
This can be problem. This also in Avatar. I don't remember the Sunrise.
Well, this is like kind of what you have to do if you're having a season
opposed
to infinite
episodes. Get there. So when we're in Cave of Two Lovers, the end, there's the city of oh no, right? So that's unrelated to the rest of the episode. So the question is, do these things? It's not necessarily a cliffhanger. It's just something that happens at the end. It could be a cliffhanger. Unrelated. That one was unrelated to the rest of the contents of the episode. The question is, does it become a problem for the narrow focused episodes? I want to point to an episode that doesn't have this problem, which is The Stakeout. The Stakeout is very focused. It kind of is different in structure in that it's like, in that it leads to like a twist at the end, but then it does kind of have a denouement where stuff happens that's still related. You don't necessarily need this to have in an episode, even if you're telling a continuous story. However, sometimes you're going to, and the question is, does it take away from the rest?
I don't really think this is this problem, though, because the entire episode is her actually on the journey with the puppy, but she's just remembering all the other stuff.
Well, in terms of time, so I'm not really concerned with timeline, right? So I think that the thing I mean is that Toph being introduced at the end is not related to Korra's Cora's journey here.
It could be. She's looking for.
It's possible they do relate it in the next episode, right? But in terms of the context of this episode,
I'm sure they will.
In terms of the context of this one, I like being able to watch one episode and tell a complete story. I don't think that's necessary, but
doesn't make it good.
Well, Dylan, here's the thing: she meets the spirit in the tree, and that. It's clear that the spirit was following her around for a while, and so he pops out and he's like, "Follow me," and that's like the and like it all ties together because
I don't really care about the timeline.
It doesn't matter. We're not talking about the timeline. We're talking about like what's happening in the episode. The episode is a timeline.
Well, it's like the episode isn't about. So regardless of the spirit's trying to...
it's about her journey. It is about the timeline.
Right, so
like,
the end... Okay, I understand what you're saying. Try to think of it this way. There's a revelation at the end that is not about Cora. I think this is kind of inherently something that's not about Cora. It's like very obvious that this is Toph. This is related to the old series.
How is not about Cora?
Because it's, like, this is Toph. This is surprising.
So here's my question then for you. Let's say it wasn't Toph. Let's say it was some random new character that had nothing to do with Avatar. They were just presenting a new character to help Korra. Would you still call it a revelation to the extent that it was Toph? Because we know who Toph is and it's the big reveal that Toph is alive?
Well, so the entire scene is focused around this reveal, right? So it just wouldn't be the same scene. So it's kind of an irrelevant... scenario
because
it's
but then the fact is
the
because but that's the thing though is that because it's Toph that's your issue with it as opposed to like if it had been any other person, which the idea is that Cora just needs someone to help her.
The idea is, well, we don't know what the idea is yet. I would reject that.
Well, then you can't reject that the reveal is unimportant.
So again, I would like to stay within this one episode because we are evaluating one episode, and I'd like
to. You can't evaluate what's said by this.
You guys are pushing back with, and I haven't even gotten to the critical evaluation of this yet. So my point is that this final scene is about Toph. I don't care if it's about someone else or whatever. It's certainly related to Cora, but there's a reveal, like I said, that's not about Cora, and I should just say that five more times. But
we should talk about something else.
So just because you don't think it's important doesn't mean it's not important. So anyway, the place where I'm going with this is that much like many episodes of the past, that we kind of shift focus at the end. And the question is, do we need to have such a narrow, focused story? And the answer is no, but I do think this episode is trying to be that, and it kind of loses track at the end. So I think this is maybe good for the season as a whole, but maybe a slight blemish on this as a one episode.
In terms of episode structure, this was genius. I would like to say, like, because your issue is the, well, I guess your issue could be the structure as well, but the content. But I think structurally, how they presented the episode, the way they ended it, was the best way they could have ended it.
Why?
Because so they have this. We see her in the present, and then we go through all these flashbacks. Then it loops back to her in the present, and then. And how like the spirit from her past links to her present, like that's, and then this reveal because the spirit wanted to help her and it brings her to who she's supposed to meet, at least according to the spirit, or who we. So like that's like structurally as an episode, like it's great.
Because
it links the flashbacks and the content of the flashbacks.
So I agree, I think that's kind of where. I think that's kind of the things that happened before this, though, right? So it's like her fighting in the ring, and then we get the flash forwards into her going somewhere. So I think that's kind of what you're talking about, which I agree with. I thought that, I thought that was brilliant. But I think the content of, like, oh, now we're going somewhere, now something's happening in the present, that could have been basically anything, I think, right? So, yeah, it's the spirits trying to help her or something, but I don't think this episode is focused on the spirit trying to help her. I don't think this is necessarily leading anywhere specifically. So I think an important point to be made is that this isn't an episode about Korra's healing, right? Korra's still in a really bad place at the end.
It's more of like, this is what Korra's been doing.
That makes sense.
It's a very informative episode in a very, like, obvious yet not obvious way, if that makes sense. Like,
So it's like, if we're telling the story, this isn't the story of Korra's healing, so we kind of can go wherever we want at the end. We don't really know yet.
It's true.
Right? So I don't think it's necessarily contingent on any specific thing. We don't need to arrive at a place where Korra is going to be doing something specific, although she just should probably be addressing this dark, Dark Avatar Korra.
It's fine.
It's fine.
That's probably what should be happening structurally here.
It's fine. It's fine.
I would say I'm going to maintain my point because I have not heard anything that would contradict such that This is, I do like, obviously I think this is well done at the end, and I think I really like how the specific scene is well done. I do question the inclusion of it if you're trying to tell such a focused story, which I do think Mike is trying to do. So I don't know. I mean, like, how else do you end this episode, though? Because we're not completing Korra's journey. I don't think there's a good way to end it any specific way. It's ending. It's also dependent on where we see where they want to go with it next episode. But yeah, we'll get more into this in terms of evaluations. Well, it's really unclear what they're going to do now. Certainly seems like Jenora and her kids are going to go somewhere. But anyway, let's get into some things that Mel thinks before we grade the episode. This segment is called Mel's Thinks.
I like a replacement for Hidden Zufara.
Yeah. Anyway, so Mel says, "See my post for my thoughts on an explanation behind the ghost that's haunting Korra. There are real reports of soldiers returning from war haunted by dark entities that, for all intents and purposes, are real to them. They see them as demonic entities that are able to physically hurt them. In particular, the soldier in Demon Camp notes that this demon was able to physically choke him and believes that it was punishing him for killing, for the killing he did in Afghanistan and for being the only member of his unit to survive. These are obviously hallucinations, but the more reality you give them, the more real they get." So Mel's talking about this post she made on Tumblr, Korra, Demon Camp, and Unique PTSD. If you want to Google that, ask Ali Mel FTSW and then that title. She compares this to this book. This nonfiction book.
It's a great post.
Yeah, so it's really interesting and a good read. I think this is kind of her, maybe, I didn't read these before actually, so this is maybe her kind of talking a little bit about what we're saying and that it can be a vision and still seemingly like physically attack you, right? So there's real life precedent for that. She says, "To that end, not only is the ghost in Korra's head, but so is her disconnect from Rava. The flashbacks to Zaheer keep her from entering the Avatar state, not out of physical inability, but out of fear. As a result, she is repressing all spiritual connection to Rava and the Avatar spirit. The out spirits could not sense Rava's energy because Korra was repressing it, much like when Korra was able to move her legs only after believing she could. She will only enter the Avatar state and reconnect with Rava when she believes she can. For now, she believes Rava has left her, probably believes Rava abandoned her out of the same guilt and sense of failure that generates the ghost entity. It's all a connected emotion, and her head is making it real. At this point in the story, a physical disconnect from Rava would serve no purpose in her arc. She's afraid of Rava being disappointed in her, afraid she's failed, so she's hiding Rava subconsciously. Back in season one, she even showed hints of being disappointed as a Avatar is her worst fear, born out of fragile self-identity based on abilities and not on inherent traits." So this is really interesting. I'm gonna provide evidence for this in that she can't be disconnected from Rava because she's bending all four elements.
Yes.
True.
Well,
it depends.
It's kind of like the chakra idea with Aang, and like he couldn't go. Like she can still be. I think what she means by disconnect is not necessarily like a complete, and to be fully disconnected from Rava for where she couldn't bend, Rava would have to be gone.
I think that's what she thinks is happening.
Yeah, Korra.
I took it more as like Rava's still inside Korra, but just repressing Rava.
I don't think Korra is going to be aware that she's repressing Rava, right? Like, I think that she thinks she's gone and she's trying to find her. But I think Mel's saying that's not true. Mel's saying, no, Rava's still inside her. She's just repressing Rava. And I think that's actually true.
It's like book three of Avatar, when no Avatar is the, because Aang died.
Except they didn't go anywhere with that plotline.
Maybe Korra's not going to get hit by a rock in the back.
No rock. Let's not solve that with that.
For Rava.
Okay, let's continue with Mel's thinks. Toph is literally the best Kershen she could come across right now. Not only is Toph, is this the next one? Not only is Toph someone who utilized and overcame a handicap to become one of the greatest benders in the world, but she will also not let Korra go around feeling sorry for herself, which will alleviate the mental blockage causing hallucinations and disconnect from Rava. I don't love the idea that Toph's just going to be mean to Korra, and Korra's like, I was just being dumb and thinking about it the whole time.
That's exactly the opposite of what I want to say.
Like, it's kind of what you're talking about with Katara, you talked about you didn't really like the characterization of Katara, and it might seem like, not necessarily out of character, but different. I think that's what we're going to see with Toph. Like, Toph, like this enlightened Toph.
Yeah, I don't think Toph.
Wise Toph.
I agree with you. I don't think Toph's necessarily.
She'll still be Toph.
That's not how she's gonna be like 24/7.
It seems like Toph being enlightened would help Korra more than Toph being Toph. I think that's kind of where I'm at. That. Back to Mel's thing.
Toph being enlightened though, like if it
was like. Go ahead.
It's cool, but like she's not gonna do what Korra needs her to do. Well, from like, now, like she did all she could do. She needs someone like Toph.
It's like Toph was the Toph she needed to be to help Aang when he needed her help, and now she can be the help that Korra needs now that she's older. And like, does that make sense?
She can be Yoda now.
Sure.
Yes, because like she, and it's. I think it's really interesting that we're having Katara and Toph like the old like they're training the second Avatar.
Old ladies.
Because like they're different in the way that they've changed through their experiences with Aang are helping them directly help the next Avatar.
Sorry.
Thanks.
Just brushing off Ali's comment. I love it. Okay.
Wow.
I agree. Wow. That's a good strategy you have to use sometimes. Let's go back to Mel's things.
You guys are so rude.
A little bit.
I love you're so rude.
You're great, Ali.
Talking to you all the way from Japan.
Yeah, at 4 a.m. It's true.
You gotta be so rude.
Okay, Korra, Mel says, Korra is still in the apotheosis stage of her, I think that's how you pronounce that word, apotheosis, of her hero's journey, in which the hero in some way, quote-unquote, dies in a physical or spiritual way and must, as a result, move beyond to higher knowledge. During this time, there's a period of rest. The next step and the final step of the main portion of the journey is the ultimate boon, where what was sought after from the beginning will be achieved by the hero. Note that all the other steps lead to this. In the most basic sense, she will achieve at the end of this what she set out to do in the first season, Master being the Avatar. What that means to her is unique and would involve a much longer post, but where she sits now, mentally and emotionally weak, seemingly disconnected from Rava, she puts her in the final position to understand the ultimate boon. Example, this is where Luke Skywalker was fighting Darth Vader in Return of the Jedi, and she says, note that the period between apotheosis and ultimate boon is the most important part of the story for the audience and the hero.
Why is it called the ultimate boon?
Okay, so let's note a few things here. One, Mel is obsessed with the monomyth, so I'm not surprised that she brought this up. we had an entire podcast on this, actually, but it was before Korra, I think.
Jesus.
I'm going to trust. Mel is a writing major, and I'm going to completely trust her on everything she just said about Korra and the hero's journey. And I have no really further things to add because I have no experience, no inherent knowledge to bring to this.
Please message me later and tell me why it's called the hero's ultimate boon or something. Because I don't know why. It sounds funny.
You can look it up.
To conclude Mel's thanks, she has small thoughts. This is truly Korra alone in a bigger sense than Zuko was last time we used this episode title.
For sure. I'm still not a fan of that, the title.
When did I say we would get to the title? I think it was now. Okay, let's talk about the title.
That's really convenient because we're talking about it. That's great.
I think it was in Mel's things, so let's talk about the title. Or let me give you Mel's two last things. The Asami letter part was cool. I'm glad they're keeping their close friendship. Tenzin had a leaf brooch. Be the leaf.
We've talked about the last two podcasts.
Also,
Hold on.
I got a text from her. She said, Fear the Reeler by Blue Oyster Cult is Korra's new theme song.
Fear the Reaper.
I don't
care,
Mel. Go away.
Doesn't
leave.
Let's talk the episode title. So obviously this is a reference to Zuko Alone. I'm a fan of this title because I think it's fairly representative.
Korra is mentally alone.
I think it's very Korra's accurate.
State. Sam, why don't you like the title?
I mean, I don't know. I don't like. It seems stupid. Just cheesy and corny in a way. Like, oh, we're referencing Zuko Alone.
I would have preferred Korra's Lost Days.
Yeah,
Korra's Lost Days.
No, I think this is better than Korra's Lost Days.
There was probably a dartboard with those two names up on the wall, and Mike was like, "Here, Mike, let me blindfold you. Throw this at it."
There's a very good yes. thing that happened.
Pick one. Dun, 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 dun.
Anyway, I don't know. I think it's fine.
They're bad at titling things, which just...
Well, I think it's a better title for this episode than Zuko Alone was for Zuko Alone. Like this,
I agree.
Like what Mel said.
Actually, no, I don't. Because Zuko Alone was like... He, like, was literally alone. Like, no one liked him. Like, people were trying to help Korra.
No one ever liked Zuko.
No one ever liked Zuko.
The Zuko alone was.
Well, then it's kind of. Well, then it's kind of.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Okay. Korra feels alone. So
Zuko alone was a literal reference to him separating from Iroh. Like that's what that meant. That's only what that meant. There's not really much deeper meaning there. I mean, yes, he was alone. Like he felt alone, but like it was probably mainly referencing
emo
him.
Zuko.
So. Anyway, I posted a picture of that scene we were talking about from the Dear Asami, so you can tell me what cliff that is. In podcast chat. So, anyway, I think it's time to grade this episode. Then we can get to the many thoughts we have from people. So, it's important to preface this with our normal grading scale because I think we're going to be close to a 10. I need to remind you all that a 10, we're going to rate this episode out of 10. A 10 is literally the best episode of television you've ever seen. And I mean literal in a literal sense, not literal in a figurative sense. So if you're going to give this episode a 10, you are saying that is either the best episode of TV you've ever seen or it's tied. Please note that. And I needed to preface this when Mel gave the last episode of Book 3 a 10. Like, same preface I gave her. Like, please be aware that this is a serious thing. Giving it a five is is an average episode of television. So where on a 10 would you grade this episode? I heard that you were prepared for this grading, let's start with Delaney.
Darn it! I know I shouldn't have told you that.
You shouldn't
have. He's going to start with me. Darn it. Well... Okay, I think I just settled on... I'm so bad at grading.
Just give a number.
9.75.
Okay, why?
Too low.
Too low. 9.75 is very high.
Between 9.75 and a 10, you don't understand how this is really intense.
Too low.
That quarter matters.
And I just... like can I give it a 9.9? Is that a thing I can do?
Yes, you can very easily.
Okay, 9.9. I didn't know what increment.
You can give it a 9.33 repeating, of course, if you want to.
9.9 into infinity. That is the grade for this episode. And I just, it's the really, again, like, the structure blew me away. I wanted the flashbacks so bad. We got them, and it was so great. And, of course, Korra's struggle. Just, this episode's incredible. Visually, everything about it is amazing. So 9.9 into infinity, like, all of the nines.
Wait, you're giving it 9.99 repeating, of course?
Yes.
That's actually a 10, though. It's mathematically equivalent to a 10.
Oh, well, my God.
Well, 9.9 anything. Like, 9.9 anything rounds up to a 10.
No, not round up. It's mathematically equivalent.
I'm
so,
aware.
No. So you're giving it a 10.
Sure, yes.
No, you can't. No, you. Okay, I'm just going to ignore this.
Yes,
because
10.
You have said many separate grades in this last minute. Allie, where would you give it?
You know.
What?
Infinity out of 10.
That's not a valid grade on our grading scale.
I think it is.
Yes, it is. But obviously, okay, everything we've talked about is like, I mean, I don't have to explain. It elicited the episode on its own was just the pacing and the structure was just really perfect. The acting was perfect. The art, the music. But then it also like just elicited so much emotion. Like in one act, I cried at least two parts in each act, like, the second time around. Like, it just was so real. It hit too close to home. And, like, I've never, like, I mean, I've never had post-traumatic stress, but, like, I mean, it's certainly something people can relate to, like, if you've seen it before, and, like, seen people struggling before, and, like, it's even relatable if you've just been struggling with, like, small things, like, and I think, I mean... Again, I've never gone through, like, so much... I mean, no, I've never gone through, like, anything like that, but, like, it's... You can take it, like, with something small and be like, if she can get through this, then I can get through, like, a tiny thing. You know? I don't know. I think it's just... It's good.
I don't think the moral of this episode is she can get through this because she's not through this.
Well, I mean, it's like she's trying to.
She's certainly
like,
trying,
she's
yeah. Yeah,
so
true.
It's like I can't like. If
I don't think this episode leaves me happy. Korra's not in a great place.
It leaves me happy that Toph is here.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I mean,
anyway,
obviously.
That's not a grade. Give it something
yes,
out of 10.
It is.
Are you actually not going to grade it?
I'm actually grading it an infinity out of 10.
So, do you mean 10 out of 10?
I mean, infinity out of 10.
Seriously, oh my goodness, that's really annoying.
It's the best
episode. You know math, infinity is not less than 10. Like,
10 out of 10.
Oh my god, stop cursing, that's too...
No. No, I'm grading an infinity and you're not acknowledging...
She gave the other one a 33. It was a 33 out of 70.
She wasn't on that podcast, though. That's fine.
I mean, I...
Sam, what would you give it out of 10?
I think I might give it a 9.9.
I think that is pretty by far the highest grade you've given a Korra
episode.
One
of the highest grades I've given.
Before.
Like, the episode was great. The backgrounds and stuff were beautiful. You know, animation was beautiful. And on a personal level, I really related to it. Like, at this specific moment in time in my life, I feel like it was important that this episode came out. And it was important that I see it. And so I really connected with it.
That's really, like, that's really nice.
Where I am right now. So, yeah.
That's really nice. Thank you. Yeah, that was infinitely times better than what Ali just said.
I am going to stab you in the face.
Let's go.
It's important to me.
Thank you. Yes. I think these are personal grids, so I think that's completely valid. Britt, what would you give it?
I'll give it a 9.5.
Why?
These all suck.
Did you just curse again?
I said you guys all suck. Oh my
okay,
god.
Good. So that's
I will water stab you in the face.
This is the highest
grade. Yeah. Oh my god. Well,
you're going to be like rated R podcast, guys.
So no, I have to edit all of it, so no.
Like,
it's
literally,
not.
It's the highest I've ever given.
Yeah, Britt, is this the best episode of Korra?
Yes, it's the best episode of Korra, but you were like saying the best episode of television ever, and I just don't think it's the best episode.
No, I think that's perfectly valid.
Ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, it's the best.
Okay, so let me actually give you an analysis of how the 10 grading scale works for me. So.
Oh,
Once you hit a 9.5 is
no one cares
is an incredibly good episode, and last episode of Korra I gave a 9.5. So now, but then after 9.5, I actually think it gets exponential. There's a lot of difference between K401 and potentially this episode. More like the stakeout. I believe I gave it a 9.8. That's much higher than last one. So I think the highest I've given a Korra episode is 9.8, and I gave that to both the stakeout and the finale of book 3. Where I'm at right now is that this is better than those two. I don't think it's perfect.
I'm going to give a 10.
No. So to me, a 10 is still the Avatar book 1 finale, but I haven't seen that in 2 years, so that's flimsy.
How long we did the rewatch? Oh god.
Yeah, that was the last ranking we did, or two or three, maybe even three now. So I guess I'm at a 9.9 with this. I think it's probably the best episode of Korra. I also think my grade on this is highly variable depending on, I need to rewatch it a few more times to really understand what's up here. But I think it's very powerful. It's a very good script. The structure is very good. I think the art is incredible on it, and. I think I'm not even subtracting points for Toph. Like, I think really it's not a 10. Maybe because
make it worse for you?
Well, I said I'm not subtracting points for Toph.
I know, but still, you're like considering it to be.
Well, better. I literally spent 10 minutes explaining that. So, but so it's more like I think Act One is a little slow. But yeah, that's where I'm at.
So, what's your grade?
So I said 9.9.
Good job.
Which is the highest I've graded a Korra episode. So. A hard question is whether this is better than Zuko Alone. That's one I have to ponder.
Oh my god, no question.
No, this is definitely better than Zuko
this
Alone.
Is better.
I just
Zuko
did a
alone
rewatch. This is better than Zuko Alone.
Of note,
I really like Zuko Alone too.
I have Zuko Alone rated like 6 or something, right? So, of course,
I feel like that would kind of be considering like apples and oranges.
So it's very difficult to compare. Zuko Alone at a 6.
I guess we would consider it in like what each episode was trying to accomplish, as opposed to like a direct comparison.
Right. So I think we'll spend a second on this. Someone asked me on Zombie Tutoring Korra Goddess 101. Zuko Alone, despite both being having like flashbacks and both being episodes that are singularly focused on one character, I think are very different.
Bless you.
I think adorable. I think are very bless you. Bless I think you. Are very Allie just giggling at that. I think they're very different episodes in terms of what they're portraying. Like, I think Zuko Alone is telling a story of something that happened in the past, and is saying how that's affecting the character we've seen before. But I think that this current episode is showing some sort of journey Korra's on, some sort of catching up on what Korra's emotional state is, stuff like that. I think it's like very different. Like, Zuko Alone's maybe more focused in that it's like telling a story. This is it's like it's also telling a story, but it's like it's less clear what that story is, right? So it's interesting.
So Zuko when we got who Zuko was before he was the outcast prince, you know.
I think Zuko's more, this is, Zuko learns more overtly, this is what it is, this is what's going on, and Korra is way more, this episode is way more subtle.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Maybe it's also just because we don't know what's going on. We haven't seen the rest of the episodes, but I think, I also think Zuko's character arc was pretty overt compared to Korra's, which has been more subtle. I mean, you can't get more overt than having a fever dream in with having a good and a bad dragon, right? That was just, yeah, crazy. Okay, now we're going to get into some thoughts from you guys. Let's start with Anon, who says, like Anonymous, now that we've seen all of the original gang, who do you think aged the best? That's a good question.
It's a tough one.
Except old Sokka.
Sokka's dead?
He is?
Oh.
We saw old Aang, though. And he's
Korra,
dead.
Because she's Aang, technically.
Or, no, wrong.
Okay, I accept.
I think Toph looks most like Toph.
Yes.
Yeah. Toph looks like Hama to me.
Yeah, she does a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's mainly just the hair, and like, because she's bent over.
I think it's just very striking how similar her eyes are.
Yeah.
Right, so I just...
And her voice is pretty similar.
Oh, we should know, Toph is voiced by... Felice Sampler. So Toph has now had three voice actresses.
Mm.
So that's good.
Wow. So that's,
it has an Aang too.
No,
Aang's
had two.
No, I don't think older Aang had a different voice actor from Middle Asia.
The oldest Aang, did he have a different voice actor?
I don't think he did.
I feel like he did.
I'm not sure though. It's
the
possible.
Same dude.
I think it was the same dude. Toongal says, how do you feel about the episode as a portrayal of PTSD? What do you make of the spirit's comments about the lack of Rava energy? Was the apparition of Korra saw a hallucination, or is it somehow connected to Ravatu? So I think we've answered the second and third. So let's talk about the first questions he has. How do you feel about this episode as a portrayal of PTSD?
I think she has cognitive disorder. I don't think she has PTSD. They're very different.
Well, okay. Right, so...
Traumatic. Like I've talked about this before. Don't assume because something that's traumatic happens and they reel from it, they're having post-traumatic stress disorder.
My impression of PTSD is that it's a fairly large, it's a fairly broad term that could refer to a lot of things. I'm not as much of an expert with this as I would be with other mental, I'm not an expert, but I don't really know as much as I would. Like, I initially wanted to like say, oh, is Korra like have some form of schizophrenia because of these hallucinations and possible delusions? But I don't think that's what's going on. Like, I think it is more of a PTSD, and I think they're trying to portray it as that because we see flashbacks. Korra literally flashes back to this fight that she had.
Yeah.
I think that kind of is leaning us in that direction. But I also think PTSD could consist of other mental things that are going on with her.
I don't necessarily think we need to diagnose Korra.
I don't think we do either.
Like, we need to just, like, we can appreciate what's going on in her struggle and what it means, and, like, with Sam, taking things from these episodes and not necessarily having to relate it to a medical case or something. Like, it's not necessary.
I don't think we need to, but I also think we can.
Well, we can, in some cases it can be offensive.
I don't think it's offensive if they are having a realistic portrayal. And
well,
I
do think it's a realistic portrayal of a traumatic event.
I don't think like writing fiction about PTSD is offensive. Like,
No, I didn't know. Like, I meant us. I meant like us in that. Like, I'm just
us
saying,
analyzing it could be offensive.
I think if we do it badly, or if we're doing it for the sake of what's going on with Korra? No, I think we're just like we're trying to genuinely see.
None of us.
Right. So let's preface this. Let's preface this that we're not like psychology majors or even psychologists.
Yeah, I don't feel qualified to make that. Like, that's why I just want to like appreciate.
So
it,
that being said, there is a book that literally lists symptoms and is for the DSM, and which is supposed to like.
DSM is not the Bible, though, Dylan.
It does exist, and it is you. It's, I'm not saying someone completely unqualified can diagnose from it, but you theoretically could be able to. Like, it literally just lists things and stuff. But anyway, I think the interesting thing in terms of specific symptoms that Korra is having, she's certainly hallucinating with this image of Miss Dark Avatar Korra. But the question is she delusional, right? Does she think that this thing actually exists? And I think that's not clear from the episode.
Well, I think it's clear that that's what she's struggling with.
It seems like she's... So... She could have to have this mantra of reminding herself, like, you're not real, without without actually believing it. It's more because it's more like, oh, I just need to remind myself that it's not real because it is physically appearing in front of me. I don't think at any point in the episode it's ever overt that she is like, oh, this thing's out to get me, right?
Yeah, so she's definitely not like paranoid, and I mean paranoid in like...
Yeah, she's certainly not having paranoid delusions. Yes, I agree. She still could be having some...
It's a lot of anger at its appearance and like, and when it appears.
She seems to just avoid it. She does she does directly confront it at one point. I would say she's at least somewhat delusional. However, not to a significant degree.
Issues, you know, like identities.
So the other question would be, does she have dissociative identity disorder, which is what people think of as schizophrenia, but is not actually schizophrenia. Dissociative identity disorder is when you have like multiple personalities.
And there's some, but she wouldn't know. When you multiple pair personalities, you like take on the, like the personality as yourself.
Yeah, so I think the answer is no, she doesn't have that.
Yeah,
that's a different entity that lives outside of her body.
So I think you probably could have. You probably could have it as a different. It's not clear. I want to relate it to some movie we've talked about, but I don't want to spoil that movie. So like, but in the movie that we kind of talked about, it's, I think he does have dissociative identity, but it's also appearing outside of him. So. Oh my god! No, I don't want to spoil.
Everyone
it.
Knows the end of Python.
Oh my god!
But like, it's. I think it's.
Dylan, everyone knows what movie you're talking about.
But like, I think it's interesting to, and I bring that movie up because I think I did write about it for my psychology class. So it's. I think he does have some form of dissociative identity, but again, it's not. He's not taking on that, so it maybe can appear in multiple forms, but I'm not sure. I would say overall, though, that Cora probably does
really
not have that.
That we don't know.
I'm not under the impression that she's at all taking on the personality of...
it's not... She views it as a being separate from her.
Yeah, and also that doesn't have a personality in itself, right, too. So that's another thing to note. It's just there. So it's more of a just a hallucination.
Yeah.
A visual hallucination. Yeah.
Which worries me almost more because she views something that is an old image of herself as being not herself.
Either. Right, yeah, so that
and
is...
even hostile.
Hostile
to her. Like, she hates it and she doesn't do it.
She's seeing herself as hostile to her, right, so that's very troubling.
It's like looking in the mirror and not...
And
not being you.
Yeah, and this is just on a theory. We're not even psychologically evaluating anymore. This is on, like, a thematic and, like, intricately at level that it's, that it's certainly very interesting. That's certainly what they were intending. And it certainly shows an internal struggle with Cora, and maybe her being, she seems to be hostile to her as the Avatar.
And the figure is in the Avatar state, so she can't go into the Avatar state, but she hates this figure that keeps appearing, so it's like she's hating the Avatar state. So this would,
trying to find it again, which is really weird,
It's like, that was my thing on it, too.
I think it's an interesting and realistic portrayal. Like, she doesn't necessarily aware that she's so angry at or so against the Avatar state or Rabba.
Or that the two are related at all.
Yeah, she doesn't necessarily connect the image she's seeing and that. It's more like we're connecting them.
Yeah. She's not super self-aware in that aspect.
Yeah, it's she could be, but I don't think we see that presented to us.
She might just be ignoring it.
She could be.
And then just going off of, I mean, of course, she's kind of dependent on what Katara's told her, that it's all in her head. And then, so that could be part of why she's not really... thinking, not necessarily like thinking on her own, but she's just Katara, the best healer in the world. Like, who is she to question or
Katara,
even to
the neurologist?
Exactly.
Yeah. So okay, I think we covered that pretty well. Actually, that's maybe my favorite discussion of the podcast so far. Okay.
Thank you.
Yay! Yeah. Good job,
Brittany. I liked it too. It was good. I'm glad we had it.
Yes. Thumbs up. Okay. Yay, team. Show Knight asks. I found Cora's dialogue in this episode a little too. Staccato. What is that word? I'm not familiar with.
Like staccato is like talk like this, like very short.
Okay.
Bit, like, yeah.
They continue. It was blunt. Blunt lines said really fast. Is it just me who noticed? So I would say I'm not bothered by Cora's dialogue. I would say Cora's dialogue is often blunt.
I love it.
I think it was often blunt in this episode. However, it was not blunt. Isn't necessarily inherently bad, right? So I think it was done well. I think it was necessary because we're skipping scenes
rightly
and time so much.
And considering what she's going through, I wouldn't be very talkative either.
Yeah, she's also just going to be just the emotional state she's in. I think it's realistic as well. I actually.
And it's not like Cora went in very long diatribes to begin with.
Yeah, that's also true. Except in episode one, I guess, of the series.
That's kind of.
So I think if anyone's, I had no problems with dialogue in this episode except for maybe Katara, who I actually found a little bit blunt. I found Katara's dialogue blunt.
Yeah, that would be my.
I almost feel like they had to do that with the episode, but.
I wasn't super bothered by it. Like obviously, I gave the episode 9.9, right? I'm not super bothered by anything, but I just think it was it. it was one of, I think Katara was one of the small flaws, maybe.
Actually, the only thing that really bothered me was that maybe Tenzin's dialogue. It's kind of weird.
See, I think Tenzin, Tenzin normally talks like that.
Like,
yeah,
Tenzin always talks like that.
I guess so, but yeah.
Such an awkward human.
He really is awkward, yeah.
He's more awkward.
Also, when Korra was like, that should be me, not her, I was like, oh, jealous much.
Yeah, right. That... I really enjoyed that line, though. I feel like it was very like encapsulating like what we're going to see this season.
Yeah. That, I didn't really like the fact that she was like, not her. Like,
yeah. But it was understandable, I guess.
Yes. Okay. Like, it was coming from a dark place, and it wasn't portrayed as a good thing, so we're good.
All right. That Avatar Chick 1805, I think this was a question for the podcast. Make sure to clarify when you send ask to the DF or my account, but I'm pretty sure this was. They say that, I assume she, because it's Chick, but similar to Zuko alone. Reason why I say that is because there are a lot of comparisons and parallels to this episode. So in season 2 of Avatar, you see Zuko wandering the desert and just dealing with issues from his past. Korra is doing the same thing because she lost connection to the Avatar state. She's now just Korra, not Avatar Korra, not Probender Korra, just Korra and Zuko alone. In 201, Iroh and Zuko both cut their hair. That was in 201. That symbolizes they're cutting ties from the Fire Nation. Korra does the same thing. When she cuts her hair, it symbolizes that she's cutting ties from being part of the Water Tribe, but I think Korra, we connect with her Avatar side. So there's some similarities to Zuko alone, but I think overall...
We've been over, that, a million times.
So the hair thing isn't in Zuko alone, but I think overall we can say Korra's relating to Zuko's journey, I think, is a good point.
Because she's no longer the other thing. She's just Korra.
Yeah, and I think that's... And Zuko is, like, casting out Prince Zuko, too. I think that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ikuvira, I think...
Had titles that they tried to become.
Yeah.
That were really part of...
That they were born with, and, like, dealing with that as their identity. Yeah. Ikuvira says, I first want to say I love y'all's podcast, and I listen to them every week. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, y'all. You're cool.
Delaney means that genuinely. Now on to my question. How do you think Toph ended up in the swamp, and why? Why she searched for enlightenment, and what advice do you think she'll give Korra?
She was sick of the press.
Sick of the press.
So why Toph's at the swamp and why she's searching for enlightenment? Like, I think that's, we have basically no way of guessing that. Yeah. I think that's just something the show's going to present and it's not going to have precedent.
They probably won't present it. They're just going to have her there.
No, I think they'll explain somewhat. I think Korra will be like, what are you doing here? Right, so.
Yeah, Toph's
like,
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And I don't know why I cut off there. What advice do you think she will give Korra? This is, we talked about this. What I don't want it to be is old Toph giving advice. I want it to be new enlightened Toph giving advice.
Yeah.
I want old Toph to make a cameo, though. Like, I don't want it to be a whole new person.
Yeah, well, she said Twinkle Toes Show. You know, same person.
Yeah.
She said Twinkle Toes. Well, I want a few rude Toph lines, and then...
But the rest to be, like, sweet. Like, old lady Toph to be, like...
Please.
Yeah.
Please, okay.
Yes, please.
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 Does Toph have earrings? No, she doesn't.
You're like, Allie, why are you yawning at 3:30 p.m.? Anand, why are you yawning at 3:30 p.m.?
Can we talk about this next
month? Anand says, since the small spirit rabbit dog... Oh, we know we talked about this one already. I already read this, actually. Yeah, so we think that... we said that that it's some sort of... maybe that the spirit's either tapping into Korra's emotions or... The spirit feels a spiritual connection to Korra and can see, like, her mental state or something. Right. The dog thing.
Korra's a dog lover.
So, I think the general point, though, is that it's not actually manifesting.
Yeah.
The thing. Okay. And then lastly, I had a long email from our friend Greg Seraphin, owner of Sensible Reason, but...
Our friend meaning your friend.
I guess. Well, he's awesome. There's a lot of stuff here, and I got it in the middle of the podcast. So he says the last paragraph's the most important, so I'm going to take his word for that and read that. If the evil spirit Korra is not a hallucination, but is a spirit, seems like it is the manifestation of Rava's connection to Korra, and Rava's pissed, or she could be trying to test Korra. That is much more unclear what the motivation is of evil Korra. Although Korra still has the ability to bend all four elements, something that is not 100% laid out in detail in the origin story, but the story seems to imply that Rava is required to access all the elements from the other nations, since Rava held the three elements for Wan. The Avatar, when reborn in theory, is only able to bend all four elements because the new physical body was connected to Rava's spirit, which held the elements. Although that brings up the question about firebending, since Wan held that himself and not Rava.
Maybe holding like
we're only halfway done.
Hold them in her body now, and Robert's been cast out of her. And Rava's like the darkness of Vatu is like growing inside Rava, so it's growing inside the other Korra thing, and it's just gonna be like this equal battle, and that's gonna be the plot twist in episode 7.
How did we get here?
Brit rants. Okay, continuing on. Though this is where it all gets fuzzy, since it is unclear whether Rava's spirit actively seeks out the Avatar or whether there is some other mechanism in the process which you're unaware that chooses the human vessel for Rava's spirit. It would seem that it is not the case that Rava's spirit still has the ability to act independently from the human host, evidenced by the fact that Rava actively spoke to Wan and considered him independent of his own thought processes, which has clearly not been the case for any of the previous avatars we've encountered other than Wan. Although there is the possibility of the Rava combining with Wan's spirit and then Wan's physical body, dying eliminated Rava's ability to act independently, but because of the eternal nature of Rava's spirit automatically upon the death of the avatar transfer the human host, the next nation, taking along the memories of the conscious of the previous host each time that occurs, that would amount for the mechanism through which the transfer of the avatar. Okay, so there's a lot of...
Oh, I have no idea what you just said.
So,
one more time in English, please.
I read it. I'm bad at... I was trying to read that kind of fast. But so what he's saying is we've discussed this. This combines a few things we're discussing. So we've discussed...
And things we've discussed on previous
We've discussed
podcasts.
This before, this uncertainty whether it is Rava reincarnating or the avatar, the actual spirit of the human
being.
Oh
god, I remember that.
So I think he's more on the line of this Rava reincarnating and carry along the consciousness of the previous host, which I think I agree with, although it's maybe not what the show is trying to present. He's also talks about something I brought up earlier in the podcast, which is that in Beginnings, it seems like Rava is necessary for bending all four elements. It's possible as things have changed since then, but considering he's bending, and he's considering Korra's bending all four elements here, it seems like Rava's still inside her. He's talking about how the Rava spirit in Wan's time was like an independent thing, and that it's separating would be, Rava separating would still be independent. It's possible it's changed since then. So I think Rava would still be, it's interesting because we haven't seen Rava come outside of the Avatar since Wan's time.
The
so there's no real precedent.
The mirage.
But
well, actually, this is the first episode that like we've actually like talked about Rava since like Korra actually says Rava. I don't think that happened at all in Book 3.
Unless
I'm just remembering.
No, they did when she talked to Zaheer.
Oh yes.
Okay.
But she wasn't important then.
Yeah, so it's like just very few like mentions of Rava. Like we haven't really talked about Rava at all since Book 2.
Yeah, I don't think we have enough information. I'm going to stick with the fact that Rava is still inside Korra.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, where else would she be?
Yeah.
Chilling.
Chilling. Where would she be chilling?
In the spirit world.
Literally anywhere.
Chilling.
In her teak. Literally anywhere.
In the teapot, yeah exactly.
Yeah, that's where she's in.
Okay,
she's
we've solved it.
Teapot,
we solved
yeah.
it. Okay. Oh, and when... Oh, oh!
We
solved it. No, but when Julie was dishing out the celebration tea, that was actually Rava inside.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So they drank Rava.
They drank
all
Rava.
That's cool.
Bolin is now the Avatar.
He's Bolin now.
So is...
No, he's spit
no,
it out.
Kuvira said none for me.
Yeah,
so
it was...
Yeah.
Like,
it
does that mean
no
Kuvira is evil
it.
Or not?
Did Bolin drink
no
it?
No one drank it.
Yeah, but Bolin put it in his mouth, right?
Yeah. He
spit it out.
But he still got some
still
of
molecular content.
So yeah. Takes
for Avatar Bolin.
Bolin got just enough of Rava to like bend like one more element. That's what's going on.
Look,
not
for,
even like
what
like,
I can do.
Yeah.
Like now he can bend mud, but he can't bend water. He can only bend mud.
No, that's why he can lava bend.
Yeah, that's why. Because retroactive having Rava inside him. Let me check my ask to make sure. Someone got one in at the last
second. Another
Anonymous one. Says, what time will the podcast be up today? Well, that's not helpful for me to answer on the podcast. Okay. I think that's...
The sun is up.
I think that's it.
Perfect.
Let's wrap things up now. And while I wait for the credits to get out. So I've been Yorino Stillen. Co-hosts have been Delaney, Ali, Sam, and Britt. I had a Bruce podcast host, tech directors AJ, Kevin, Jeff, music credits, the Yoshida brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman, Luke Tripp, Logan Banner by Kevin, Dong Fing, Zone by Jake. Thank you, Gareth, for once again donating to the podcast.
We need to up your nickname again.
Gareth is now special contributor on the credits page. And
yay.
Special contributor Gareth's contributors, Sierra, Nick, Devin, Lexi, Colin, Gretchen, Britt, Nathan.
What are we doing with this money?
G Money, Sierra Miss, Nick at Night, Rudy and Tabuti. coin, fetching Opal and Iroh. But now we need to give Garrett another nickname.
Yeah, G-Money was the first one, so you can, like, up his nickname.
Yeah, like, it was, like, G-Man, that's G-Money.
You can, we can think on this. It doesn't
have to be,
yeah. It'd be G...
G-Millionaire.
G-Millionaire, yeah.
No, that's...
Young Money... Young Money Millionaire.
No, that's okay. Yep. We could. Okay. Anyway, if you want donation information, dongfeng.net/podcast. There you can also, dongfeng.net/podcast, you can find podcast bios. Teresa has been redoing, or not redoing,
yes,
just doing
has.
New drawings for, there's four of them up. You can see me as like in Jenora's like a Jedi pre-master robes. There's Sam with a mohawk with the background, and it's great. And there's Mel's
rocks under my shirt.
Yes, and rocks everywhere. There's Mel outside of a volcano sitting there menacingly, and Allie with the new Airbender costume in Avatar Korra Park. So those are pretty great. You can check those out. These vaguely look like us, so there's a
vaguely.
They're actually pretty. They're pretty accurate. They're
great. So. I mean, normally my hair's in a ponytail, so
my hair is not that long yet, but it's okay.
That's okay. Okay. What else is on the outline? Give us, if you want to, you can give us iTunes ratings. Search for Korra or From the Spirit World on iTunes. Follow me on Tumblr at DylanFTSW. If any, you have any questions for me, you can ask there. You can follow these guys' Tumblrs. Go to dongbufeng.tumblr.com, and the post about the podcast will link to their Tumblrs. The Dongbufeng Tumblr, by the way, is the happening place to be, with almost 4,000 followers now, so you should go follow the Dongbufeng account, because everyone is. So do what everyone's doing, is what I'm saying. At Dongbufeng for our Twitter account, and post on the Dongbufeng forums at dongbufeng.net/forums.
Allie,
you can also you can give me feedback there, too, on this podcast. Yes, Allie.
I don't know. Never mind.
She forgot.
Follow my YouTube thing, because I'm doing Korra reactions now.
Okay, yes, go to...
I have a MyFamily account. You should.
Oh, yeah, yes. What is it?
Do that, too.
Shut up, I ship...
Shut up, yes, I ship
myself. Not yeah, I ship.
Oh, I said yeah last. I apologize. Yeah, so follow Grits.
Is it yes or yeah?
It's yes.
Yeah. Go to my e-portfolio and look at my art.
Okay, great.
You should.
Let's plug everything now. It is 4:40 a.m. for Allie. That's great.
Woo!
We'll be there next week. We'll be here next week to discuss episode 3, title question mark, about...
I have so much fun thinking, making up joke titles.
Episode 3, Bitter Work, part 2.
Yes.
That's that's a good point, actually, yeah.
Episode 3, episode 5, that's what it's called.
That'd be, okay. This is delusional Alley now.
What's it called? The Empire Strikes Back?
Okay, what are we going to end on?
Wait, what's episode 5 called?
Empire Strikes
Back. Yeah, you're right.
Yes,
yeah, so episode 3, The Empire Strikes Back. Let's end on Twinkle Toes.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought it was Puppy, you can't... What? Which one, Brit?
Twinkle Toes Puppy.
Twinkle Toes Puppy, I'm okay with
that. Wait,
those.
The puppy's name is Twinkle Toes, that's what it can be.
So either,
I'm naming the puppy.
If it's like Toph's personal spirit, then she could she probably names
What if it is?
Then its name would be Rock.
Rock. Wow.
Rocky.
Toph just names everything Rock. Yeah. Okay, thanks for listening, guys. 1, 2, 3, puppy.
Twinkle toes.